coffee.
Jessica loves when I do that.
That's good.
Because I do that a lot.
In bed.
Also Bulba. Bulba, Bulba. Bulba,
Bulba, Bulba,
Squirtle.
Wait, which Squirtle was that? Was that sunglasses Squirtle or regular Squirtle?
I don't recall if sunglasses Squirtle emoted any differently than regular Squirtle. And then Charmander was Yeah, go ahead.
I thought he was like gravelier. He's like Squirtle.
Just like he probably was like Squirtle. What's up, Squirtle?
How come like Pikachu is the only one that had like the cute Yoshi voice, and then everyone else is like just an emphysematous smoker?
Charmander was like Charmander. But then when he evolved, he was like Charmeleon.
Right, and then there was always Psyyyy.
Yeah. all the like girly Pokemon basically were allowed to have like effeminate, approachable voices, and then all the male Pokemon had to be like, motherfucker.
Machop, I'm a effer.
Rattata!
Scyther had a pretty good voice.
Good time.
But you know who had the best voice? Fetch far, far, fetch, fetch, far, far.
Is that what he said?
Far-fetched.
Fetch far, far?
Yeah.
I don't think I watched the Far-Fetched episode, to be honest with you.
It was the best episode ever, because it was all about Far-Fetched.
I mean, the reasoning is sound, but...
uh-huh. Undeniably the greatest Pokemon of all.
He's pretty great. I want him to turn into Mega Far-Fetched and be really stupid.
Yes.
Make it happen.
Well, no, you can't put wings on a tiger, man.
Yes, you can. You can put wings in a tiger. You can.
Okay, the only way you make Farfetch'd better is you just make him slightly bigger.
What if you give him like another head? What if you give him like another head and he has a really derpy expression on that other head?
And he's out. He's better. On his back, but the wings are hands.
Yeah, give wings to his wings.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, so are we doing this?
We'll save that
business
one for Pokemon Puzzle League. Yep. Let's do it. Right.
Pokemon Trose.
Okay.
Alright.
Speaking of Pokemon Trose. Alright.
Is that how this is going? Get in there.
Uh-huh. Okay, I'm going to do this. We can start this and get going. Hey everybody, it's Boss Barrel Radio. End of the year gaming discussion. 2015 is over. Put a bow on it. We're ready to talk about the best games of the year. Bam. I'm Griffin Hoffman, and with me is...
Jeff Brewer.
James Scherer.
Esquire.
Esquire. Extraordinaire. Ace Attorney.
Esquire. Escort. Escort.
Are you going to be James Scherer, MD, for all time after you become a doctor?
Actually, I'm in the Surgeon Simulator Certificate Program.
Jeff Brewer, taxpayer.
James Scherer, erstwhile voter.
So guys, we've done this
game
before.
Of the year is Dragon Age.
Dragon Age Inquisition.
Yeah, it's my game of year.
Well, we've done this before a year ago.
Dragon Age.
At which point we argued bitterly about Dragon Age, but we've also done this very thing a couple times before, and we're hoping that this time we'll succeed.
Yep.
Everyone cross
their
fingers.
This one's not gonna break. Unless
do,
the audio sync is awful, but whatever.
Your cast will be sent to the gallows.
That's yep.
Two
I'm
of the three of
with
us
just
have...
one life left.
Two of the three of us have brand new circular mics just for this.
It's true. I got a pop filter, but I don't think it's actually doing anything remotely important.
Nope.
I learned the word plosive though, so I'm pretty excited about that.
What is plosive mean?
Apparently it's explosive sounds that come out of your
Is
mouth.
That what your dog has?
No, it's come out
plosive
of somewhere
anal
else.
Leakage.
Oh. My dog has stuff coming out of his butt, guys. It's a good time.
Have you gotten up in there? Cool. Taking a look.
I've not gotten up in there yet. If he does eat one of those little wall sticker things, I might have the chance.
You always have the chance.
Jamie pulled a little wall sticker thing out of his old dog's butt.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Like a fat head? Like a whole fat head of, like, the Incredible Hulk?
No, no, no. The things you throw at the wall.
Like the little hands, oh. Little sticky hands with the strings on the
sticky
end?
Sticky hands. That's what you had after you were in there, dude.
No, that's what comes. That's where they're made. They're made inside dogs' butts.
Exactly.
Oh, goodness.
I changed my mind. My game of the year is Rise of the Tomb Raider because it's the best pre-order I've ever made.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's my game of the year.
Plus, Lara,
you guys
want,
are we doing personal hair. Lists? Are we doing, like,
yeah, let's
personal,
do personal
pan
lists.
Pizza lists?
Personal uh-huh. pan pizza lists.
So first is
sponsored
Little
by
Caesars.
Domino's.
Ooh. First American is Little Legends. Caesars. Wait, how yeah. long can the list be?
It can be infinite.
Uh-oh. Oh, infinite list.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we're going for, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're going to actually rank every game released this year.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I thought we were going to rank every pizza released this year.
I think it's all those Pizza
oh,
Hut
God.
Combinations.
Speaking of that, I just took a picture because I intend to post it online. I bought a limited edition pizza today.
What does that even mean? Isn't all pizza limited edition?
No, this one is from Tombstone, and it has a gigantic stamp on the front that says, Limited Edition Diablo.
Tombstone, thusly named because you'll die after you eat it. Just immediately.
Amazing.
There was also like a bratwurst pizza, and I said,
"Oh,
oh
God,
that was limited pizza. Edition." Yeah,
don't put that on your pizza.
No, I don't think so.
It's not okay.
I feel like somewhere along the line, pizza became not what will be delicious, but like, how can you torture yourself the most?
I think that's what happened to you and me, Jamie. Whenever you come yes. up to visit,
yep,
and we decide to order a Domino's pizza at like 11:30 p.m.
You guys know the
Did
Domino's?
You guys throw the bones? Is that where the bones were thrown?
That's where the
yeah,
bones were
first
thrown.
First time ever? Uh-huh.
The bones were thrown, and we never looked back after that.
Nope.
The toilets were never the same.
Just a smoking crater.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
I
so anyway.
All right.
I want to hear you guys' lists real bad. I'm on the edge of my okay. seat. I've got a little bit of leakage. It's gonna be okay.
Keep that butt up. You don't want to ruin that seat.
A little slip and slide going on.
A little slip and slide, and I'm gonna continue to leak until you guys tell me what were your favorite games of the year.
Okay.
Yeah. So how do you want to do this, Griff? Do you want to just have us each make our way down the list and take turns, or do you want?
Yeah,
to, like,
yeah. Let's
all
take
at
turns.
Once?
Let's go to 10 to one, taking turns back and forth.
All right.
Okay.
Okay,
Jamie, what's your number 10?
My number 10 would be probably Ori and the Blind Forest.
Oh, you have a 10 list. Snap.
Yeah, guys. God.
I was thinking you'd be too busy being a doctor to have the 10.
I'm Let me just, tell you what being a doctor entails. You show up, you get your hands covered in blood, and then you touch as many things as possible with those hands.
Okay.
That's all. Then you get to go home.
Okay. Well, that's exciting.
So you touched more than 10 bloody games this year.
Exactly.
Or is it just Ori and the Blind Forest all the way to 2 and then Tomb Raider?
Well, you're going to have to wait to see that. That's going to be... Oh. Yeah. I'm going to keep you guys on the edge of your seats as well. But
yeah, I've the leakage has stopped for me. I've cinched up so tight. In anticipation.
So, Ori and the Blind Forest, I had no anticipation for whatsoever. And I don't actually consider myself that much of a Metroidvania fan. I know that you guys are probably much more fans of that style than I am, and as
you're a Mets mania fan, aren't you?
You love Mets and you love roids, but you just don't love Metroid.
exactly. I love Mets as in cancerous metastases, and I love roids as in hemorrhoids. Those are my two. No, but I just think it's a really charming game. The soundtrack is fantastic. It kind of grabbed me more than I anticipated. I put like 10 hours into it over the course of 2 days while I was supposed to be like working and studying, so that in and of itself is like a game has to do a lot right for me to like stop studying for a test to like and get a worse
now you're homeless but it was worth it.
That game's I'm sure everyone knows by now that game's really hard. But it's not hard in a punishing way. It's not hard in a Meat Boy kind of way, although it kind of... It almost scratches the Meat Boy itch without being as, like, punishing and making you want to throw the controller on the ground.
How does it do, like, a Meat Boy thing? Is it, like, really difficult platforming or what?
It's really difficult.
Also, what causes the Meat Boy itch? Is it the meds or the roids?
That's actually... It's all the gluten. Way too much gluten.
And the vaccines.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you gotta pull the oil out of the soles of your feet. And if you'd like, I can sell you the device to pull the oil out.
Mm. So. Does it get rid of the effects of chemtrails as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
But you're going to need another product of mine to do that. All told, maybe, you know, $1,200 bucks? Not so bad.
No,
you
know, that's a steal.
Oh, nice. For getting
your life back. Yeah, honestly. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. I can't even put a price on that.
I paid
really
more
long
for less.
Platforming, really long platforming sequences with insta death like spikes in the middle, but that are just so well thought out that it may take you 5-10 tries to get through the entire sequence. They may have a wall jumping sequence that lasts literally, you know, 3 minutes or 4 minutes, and it'll take you a couple tries, but every time you'll get farther. And it's just something about the way that they thought about how they would lay these challenges out, so that every time you get a little bit farther, and you never feel like you never have that feeling of like, oh, that was cheap, like, oh, those spikes came out of nowhere and
oh,
that sucks. Like, I
you're like, this
really
one's on me, game. It's on me. It's not you. It's me.
Exactly.
Is that our new version of Tough But Fair? It's not you. It's me.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
so
I like
really
it.
That's all I really have to say about that game.
It's also quite the looker, right, as I understand?
Yeah, it's gorgeous, and I think that you'll know, it's unfortunately, it's the kind of game where you'll play it for 5 minutes, and you'll know if you'll like it. Like, if you didn't, I know you guys gave it a try, I'm pretty sure that no matter how many times you'll go back to it, you probably won't get sucked in, but if you play it for 5 minutes and you get sucked in, then you know it's for you.
Yeah, I'm sad I didn't get sucked in, because I do love me some Metroidvania, but I'm glad that at least one of us enjoyed it enough to put it on our list.
Yeah.
I can talk about my number 10.
Yeah, sound-wise, it's supposed to be pretty well-regarded, correct? I think it's worth a nod for that, at the very least.
In terms of music?
Oh,
Jamie,
yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. And the music, like, is matched with some incredible visuals. It's not just, you know, there are, like, little cutscenes that are run in the engine. What I appreciate about the cutscenes is that it never stops being 2D. Like, it never takes you out of that view that you're used to having. But you'll have these beautiful cutscenes of, like, these incredible, like, forest creatures, like, bosses that you'll fight will, like, you know, descend through the actual levels to get to you. And like,
oh, that's awesome.
You know, the swelling score is happening in the background. And it's really cool.
I have one question for you about this game. You can just answer yes or no, it's fine. Platformer with an art style?
Yep. Best one of 2015.
Oh, Griffin. You little rascal.
Jeff. Oh, I know. That joke never gets old. Jeff, what's your number 10?
My number 10, here you go, Jamie. I'm going to throw you a bone in the world of Tomb Raider. It's actually Lara Croft Go for
nice.
Mobile devices. And I don't know if it ever came to PC. But this is a game, kind of like with Jamie, I guess. I didn't really expect that I would care about this game, especially because I played a lot of Hitman Go, and I didn't really like that game very much. And what I didn't like about Hitman Go, you know, just to kind of give you some history, it's basically a puzzle game with a little bit of, like, a board game aesthetic, and it's all about, like, you move your piece, and then all the other pieces move at the same time, and there's a lot of, like, moving around in specific ways to manipulate enemy patterns and stuff. What I didn't like about Hitman Go is that it felt like there was a lot of just kind of waiting around. Also, like, for example, like, sometimes you'd have to just stand on one place and move back and forth, like, 5 times in order to, like, clear a mission. Also, I felt like it was very disjointed. Like, I never really cared about the game. And, I, you know, you don't always have to care about puzzle games, but it can be nice when that's thrown in. And I feel like with Lara Croft Go, everything that I didn't like about Hitman Go has basically just been, like, revamped and completely fixed. No longer do you have to stand... Yeah, go ahead.
If you have to choose, which one did you like more, Hitman Go or Hitmon Lee?
Actually, Hitmonchan. I thought he was great in, what's that game? Rumble in the Bronx?
Oh, yeah. Rumble in the Bronx Mon.
Yes. Police Story Mon. anyway, no. So in Lara Croft Go, no longer do you have to wait around all the time. Also, it's a little bit more forgiving in kind of your movements. Usually, like, in Hitman Go, like, you'd get, like, a little area where, like, you'd have two dots to move between, and you'd have to shuffle back and forth on those two dots repeatedly. But, like, in Lara Croft Go, like, they'll give you, like, a square to move around on. So it's, like, it just feels a little more open, and there's more pathways. Not every single thing has to be, like, perfectly lined up and timed. And it might make the game a little easier, but it kind of makes it feel more open and more inviting to play. And it also enhances this kind of sense of, like, actually exploring a world as opposed to just kind of being on like a puzzle board and looking for a solution. And I feel like that kind of sense of exploration is, like, enhanced at every point in the game. Like, the enemies feel more, like, enemy-like as opposed to just being board game pieces. They, like, have animations. They have some character to them. And, like, Lara, when she, like, jumps around, does, like, cool flips and stuff. And even though these sound like small touches, they really help to enhance the feel of the game a lot. And I also like that there's, like, a quest that you're going through. Like, you're collecting things and you're going towards something. And as stupid as it sounds, like, just having that as, like, the backdrop for the game allowed me to get way more invested in experiencing this particular iteration of this kind of formula. And I think it's just, it's taking, like, what was a good idea in Hitman Go that maybe had some layers that might have been off-putting to some people and kind of making it work, like, for the masses. Like, making it work for anyone who just wants to, like, play a fun little, like, exploration-type game. Because, like, maybe it's a little bit easier, but it's just so much better in every other respect, so.
You say it's for everybody, but if I was a snake, should I play it?
This game, there is some problematic snake representation in this game. Snakes are portrayed as murderous monsters and are shot repeatedly. Lara Croft backflips over and shoots many a snake. But nice. it really is a fantastic game, and I haven't gone into it yet, but it actually got a free update, which kind of brings back, it sounds like, more of the Hitman Go type puzzling, which is, like, kind of tough as nails. Lots of kind of waiting around for patterns to line up and stuff. So if you really liked that, I think that free update will probably placate you. But it was a real surprise for me, and I really had a great time with it. And I think it's my only mobile game on the list, but it is very deserving. So you guys should all check it out.
Yeah. I will. It's on my wish list as soon as it drops and to beyond the exorbitant price of $2.99.
You goddamn monster.
I know, man.
You just had to get your Dunkin' Donuts coffee that day. You couldn't you couldn't play a Lara Croft Go for, like, 10 hours.
Pennies a day.
Yeah. Well, wait, that's that mobile gaming curse right there. If it's more than a dollar, it's a premium product. But it's really worth it. And I experienced it on iPad. I'm sure it would work on other devices, but it was really nice to play there. Very worth it. Oh, also, one little other thing about that game. There's a fun little metagame where you collect hidden objects in every level, and it's really simple. It's basically you just, like, look for shiny stuff and click on it. But I feel like it encourages you to kind of engage with the environment, and you get unlockables from it. Like, you get little, like, outfit changes and stuff, and like,
yes,
stuff like that. Kind of not important, but I feel like it encourages you to kind of admire the level design and look at what the designers, you know, like, worked on in terms of art and all that stuff. So it's a nice little add-on.
It really makes you look at the, yeah, you're exactly right, because you'll be standing on at one point and you won't be able to see whatever you're supposed to click on, and then you'll step one step forward, and you'll realize, just because of how many layers there are to the level and how things shift, and then all of a sudden one of the secrets will be shown to you. It's really cool.
Yeah, and the levels are nice and long, and, like, they have, like, a flow and, like, a story to them. Unlike Hitman, which has much shorter levels, which are kind of contained puzzle boxes. Yeah. It's really quite a great game, and I highly recommend it. So anyway. What do you got for number 10, Griff?
10. On my list, number 10 is SteamWorld Heist.
Oh, great game.
Yes, thanks to Jeff. Played it this year. Came out at a very fortunate or unfortunate time of the year, depending on your perspective. Like, right, what was it, the week last week of December, I think.
Pretty much. I think it might have been like the first or second week, actually, but close enough.
So I guess the most common comparison is like it's a 2D XCOM. So what that means is it's like has this randomized level with strategic turn by turn action elements that are going on and for each level. For me, it's a lot more enjoyable than XCOM because it's a lot less like stressful. First of all, when you lose characters or people die, you can just restart the mission or you can finish a mission and exit it, and you just get like monetary punishments. Your characters aren't dead forever. It has the fun like SteamWorld aesthetic, so everybody's kind of like steampunky robot, but not in a shitty steampunk way, like in a like Futurama kind of way.
Yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah, it is, and. It has, I mean, it has such, like, a diversity of, it's so surprisingly deep with what it offers. Like, all the characters that have unique abilities that kind of, you know, grow as you're leveling them up in more than just kind of like a skill tree kind of way. Like, they match the little robot personality that they also have. There's a ton of loot. The weapons definitely make a difference. And they, like, the fact that you can bank bullets off walls to make more like make trick shots, it's really cool. And there's like grenade launchers with arcs. It kind of has like a Worms feel to it in that regard. It's also just bigger than you would think it would be. Like the game just kind of keeps on going. When you complete the I completed the first area and I was like, oh okay, I'll probably be done here. Nope, here's another world to go check out. But I don't know, Jeff, maybe you want to talk a little bit more. I just have some notes here, and I think that it's a great game because it's super easy to get hooked into it.
Yeah.
It's short. The missions are very short and bite-sized, but offer like enough of a challenge. Its surprising nature combined with how hard it hooked me and I just couldn't put it down for 2 days is why it fell on number 10 and ousted a game from my list.
Yeah, and I'll touch on it when I get there, because it is on my list as well, so I'll say more when we get there. But I
what
hardly
game
agree
did it
Griffin.
Oust? I'm very curious.
It ousted Galaxy. So
oh, cool.
We'll talk more on the games that didn't make the cut later on, but yeah, that one, it kind of kicked it off.
Screw you, cool. Galaxy.
So I guess
no!
I guess it's me. Guess it's
back to
me.
Jamie.
So my number nine is Axiom Verge. And I realized that my number 10 was Ori, and now it's Axiom Verge, and that's kind of like... Yeah, and I very much purposely put the two Metroidvania games at the end of my list because they were both really great, but I don't know. Neither of them really, changed the genre for me in any substantial way, but...
I feel like there's a ceiling for Metroidvania. Like,
exactly.
It can be fantastic, but it is at its heart like a formula. So you have to really be interesting in order to break out of there. So
I could easily come back to these games and replay them in the future, and I think I'll remember both these games incredibly fondly. And overall, this year has just been great for games, I think. But it is kind of a shame that both of these games are at the end of my list, and neither of them really broke the mold. But what I liked about Axiom Verge is that everything that I thought I was going to lead me to do, it never did. And
yes,
it took on those
so
challenges
right.
in a completely different way. So you'll see a little slot in the wall, and you'll think, "Oh, I'm going to become smaller like a ball, and then I'll roll through that slot like in
Metroid."
Metroid. And then that's not what happens. You'll actually get you get a little drone, and then that's how you're going to get through those. And then the drone has a different attack than you, and it's so unique in that way. Like, a lot of thought went into overcoming each of those little obstacles and each of them is in a completely different way than you might think. I like how that game has elements that break the fourth wall a little bit in terms of, you know, you're disturbing reality to get through a lot of these like broken pixels, and that's kind of cool. I like the feel of the game. I think the music and the art style are very complimentary. And I thought it was like a really good length. I thought it stopped when it needed to stop. The only reason that I the only things I can knock it for is the last boss was not as like cool or exciting as I thought it could have been, especially considering that you're meeting along the way these incredible looking giant creatures that look so artfully designed. And then the last boss is kind of a letdown, even though one of those huge creatures is involved in that final boss fight.
But it's not the like the crux of it. It's just like it shows up as a buddy.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's how it kind of let me down.
Yeah, I was gonna say it actually. I kind of want to piggyback on you because it was also my number nine.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sweet.
And I really agree with you about the kind of bizarre approach to solutions, because it's a game that hews so closely to the original Metroid, like in its art style and in its the way it presents itself and the way you move through the world in the beginning. And it presents like very Metroid-y challenges, and then it's like, no, actually, like, you thought you were going to get the high jump or the double jump, but actually here's a grappling hook, and you have to somehow find a way to double jump with that. And it's so stupid, but great. And I really had a fantastic time with that. I felt like the level design was really good, personally. Except for one tiny part, which screwed over Griffin and I, and I think maybe you, Jamie, do you recall what I'm talking about?
By the time I got there, you guys had already explained to me what to do.
Yeah, I hope they patch that, because that is like there's one blemish on what was otherwise a fantastic game. Jamie, I'm actually curious, because you put this one position above Ori. Was there any thought process in that, like why it bested Ori in your mind?
Mainly because, really, nothing other than like I was explaining, like my time is at a little bit more of a premium now than it used to be, and I feel like I love them both, but Axiom Verge commanded my attention enough so that I finished it. Whereas,
I mean, that's, you know, it suggests there's something intrinsically more compelling about it, whether or not we can articulate that. I just feel like it was maybe less ambitious in its kind of like pixel style and all that. So maybe it was a little like tighter. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the Ori is extremely tight. I feel like it controls both of these games to me controls so well. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't knock either of them for the way that they feel. But there could be something to that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I feel like more simplistic games sometimes feel better than more complex games with maybe like a fuller range of motion. So like Ori maybe has a little more complexity to his motion. Or is Ori the name of the character? I don't even know.
I don't know.
Because so, there's another dude that shows up at the beginning, which you kind of think might be a character, but then is not.
I think you're Ori. I think the other.
Yeah, I think you're Ori. Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Research.
But yeah, I'm not really sure. But for whatever reason, for me, this game Axiom Verge really grabbed me. Maybe it was kind of the novel. Maybe it was kind of the way it played with nostalgia and subverting expectations that really excited me in a way that Ori didn't. Ori was kind of its own thing. Like it obviously had its influences, but it was trying to go its own way. And maybe this game kind of cheaply hooked me by, like, playing on, you know, my sense of, like, wanting to relive the past a little bit and then kind of subverting that. Not unlike A Link Between Worlds, kind of, with, like, presenting an age-old kind of obstacle and then being like, no, we're not doing this the way you thought we were.
but that's not cheap. That's smart. I mean,
no, that is smart. I mean, it's cheap in the sense that it's kind of like manipulating people, but there's nothing wrong with it if it works. You know, it just is what it is. So, but yeah, I'm glad it made your list too, Jamie, because it was I really had a fantastic time with that game. And I was also going to say I love even though I didn't get into it, I love kind of the like meta glitch thing that was going on where like
the codes you can put in.
You could put in codes and like you could like find random areas in the world that were glitched and they were different in every game and you could find like glitch guns in there. There was some weird shit going on that I didn't personally touch, even though I think 100% of that game, but it's cool that it exists for people who are into that kind of stuff. I feel like
definitely
so
yeah.
Anyway, Griffin.
Yep.
Number nine.
Didn't make my list. That was no Axiom Verge for me.
No.
But here, I mean, this one, you'll appreciate, Jeff. Number nine was Invisible Ink.
Yes.
Which hung on. I took it off a couple times and I was like, no. It hits all the things that I love about video games. First and foremost, it's cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like the art on it, and then the, it, like that clay kind of like nicely animated, chunky,
kind of angular. I don't know.
Yeah, it had a really, really cool look to it, which I appreciated. It didn't have that, like, grungy cyberpunk, which was a nice change.
And you can zoom in and it doesn't look like crap.
Yeah.
Was that the case in, like, Mark of the Ninja or something?
I remember what was that Kickstarter game?
For Clay?
No.
No. Are you thinking about Shadowrun, where you zoomed in and think that it looked kind of gumpy?
Yeah, just a little bit. But,
yeah. Yep. Yeah. I think they were going for a little more realistic kind of attention, and Invisible Ink benefited from having that more cartoon clay filled out cartoon look.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm sure, Jeff, you'll talk more on this since I'm sure it's on your list as well.
Yeah. It's pretty high on my list. Yeah.
Yeah. And the reason it's not for me is because I played it once, I did my thing, I had my go at it, and like it was so stressful. And so I didn't want to do it again. Mm-hmm. I had my story.
No doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to walk away from it, but yeah, like tactically it was fascinating. Like being able to make so many interesting decisions in just one level, the multifaceted, approaches that you could have, with how to try and, tackle your objective, like going in guns blazing is almost never the best thing to do, but always a viable option. Yeah. And especially when you're in like the final level, you have so many more characters at your disposal, and you kind of have the feeling of like, okay, it's time to let some people go if necessary, just to get to the end and make this thing happen. So it was like actually a challenge of using all the tricks you've learned so far, but then I kind of was okay with having some disposable characters there. Having that like decision making that happened on not just the mission side but like the level selection,
where you're
like flying your plane, you're like, well, what do I do? Do I go and try and get some more money, or do I get technology, or what is my angle here? What would benefit me?
I feel like in that mid mission period, it kind of reminds me of XCOM again to pull in this game, but it's not incredibly overwhelming like XCOM is. Like you have a couple of things to think about as opposed to a million things, which is great. So,
right, and it never seemed nearly as like punishing as XCOM would be.
Yeah,
you know, you always had enough options to kind of get out of a bind instead of like, you know, walking a character too far ahead and then boom, you get trapped by a million different aliens. There was enough tools in place for that to not happen.
Well, there were a lot of difficulty options too, which kind of really fleshed things out in terms of how much you wanted to push things, how punishing you wanted it to be. So.
Yep. Well, whatever the standard setting was just punishing enough for me, because I had a good time, but it was like, oh, yep, if I do this again, I'm going to feel really stressed out.
Such good stress, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll talk about it
I
more
mean, and the characters that were in it, too, I really like I said, it was my story. Like, I found these people, and then I went to do the second playthrough, and I was like, well, I don't want to do this again because, like, I had my agents, and I had their, like, actions that they did. I'm not interested in, like, doing it again with new people.
Griffin, I don't think roguelikes like jibe with your manner of approaching a game.
Not one bit.
It's kind of adorable.
very stressful. Not enough story. Anyway, that's my number 9, Jeff. You'll give it more
I'll talk about it again later.
Breakdown, I think later, yeah.
Yeah.
So 8 for 8 me is Yoshi's Woolly World, which I actually didn't expect to make my list, but when I was thinking about it, I realized that I put enough time into that game, and it kept my attention longer than it should have, so it probably deserves a spot. Like, I kept playing Yoshi's Woolly World through playing Mario Maker, through playing these other platformers on my list that I've already mentioned. Something about that game is really endearing, because for me personally, it takes the Kirby's Epic Yarn formula, which I appreciated, but it wasn't one of my favorite games, and it somehow like perfected that for me. So it made that kind of, the levels themselves are fairly easy, but it's really about the collecting, and the collecting, getting 100% on each level, can actually be fairly hard. It took that formula for me and like perfected it to a T. In addition to that,
would you say that it took Kirby's outline and filled it in?
Pretty much. I will say that it does feel substantially different, because I feel like more like care was put into the art of each level. Like, unlike Kirby, everything in every level is looks like it was made of yarn, and looks like it has, like, a density to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's, like...
It is beautiful, no doubt.
It's completely beautiful, and it also harkens back, in a good way, to the SNES version of this game.
Super Mario World 2.
I love that game. Yeah.
Yeah, hell of a game right there.
It actually, like, it actually evokes that while still changing it up a little bit, and I thought that was commendable.
That's so interesting, because I actually loved Epic Yarn, but I haven't been sucked in by Woolly World yet. But I'm glad that you are appreciating it in a, you know, serious way, Jimmy, because I think that those kinds of games have a place. I think kind of the simple platformer with the kind of more challenging collectibles. Yeah. So I'm glad to hear you liked it.
I'm really big on this new Nintendo thing of the levels being like 10 minutes long, but having multiple sections and having, like, you know, a lot to find in there. I'm really digging that.
That's really cool. I didn't know that they were doing longer levels.
Well, I think in some of their lesser
platformers,
like, they're not like marquee platformers, they're doing long levels. I mean, even Tropical Freeze had pretty long levels.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
But I don't know. I'm not usually super crazy about long levels. That's part of why I was a little put off by Rayman Legends and Origins sometimes, because the levels can get pretty long. And that was just... It feels kind of exhausting for me. It's kind of the tension thing, like what Griffin said. But it's interesting that appealed to you. So,
Yeah.
Sweet.
Muffle.
Muffle.
Yes,
Muffle.
Muffle.
Awesome. You have any other thoughts about Woolly World?
No, I'm going to contrast it with another game on my list higher up in a bit.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. Foreshadowing.
A sneak peek.
anyway, I'll do my number 8 then. Familiar face. My number 8 was SteamWorld Heist, which I got at the end of the year, like this guy Griffin over here, and then I loved it so much that I convinced your guys' significant others to help me get it onto your 3DSs.
Which was awesome.
Thank you.
That was so cool.
I
got a question for you, Jeff.
Yes.
What was the better game? Playing SteamWorld Heist or doing the Ocean's 11-esque strategy to get our significant others to download this game for us?
You guys both had complications. Jamie had to install a system update. And nice. Shannon was like straight up like bonding it. She was like, okay, we need to make sure Jamie doesn't come upstairs. And she'd like hide the phone under the pillow. It was pretty fantastic. And then Jen just borrowed your 3DS and said she wanted to play Professor Leighton, which I thought was fantastic.
Yep. Yeah. The other, it was also a little bit more complicated on my side because the small Chinese man that you sent this way did die in transit.
What? Amazing. The Chinese man?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was supposed to unlock the vault from the inside, but he was pretty much dead. He didn't leave any holes in his suitcase.
Dummy.
Rookie mistake. But anyway, Griffin kind of already talked about what he liked about this game, and I agree with everything. I actually played it on the highest difficulty because I wanted to have, like, an extreme challenge, and I know, it's silly, but it was, like, so tense on the highest difficulty. It was really hard, and obviously I died in numerous times in certain areas, but I think in those tactical games, I really love that tension. Like, I don't like them in platformers, but I love it in tactical games. And this game has it in spades. And it has these moments, too, and Griffin kind of alluded to it with the trick shots, where you have to aim, and you have to aim well, and you have to hope that you don't fuck up. And there are some guns where you have... So just to kind of explain to listeners, So it's like XCOM that you have two moves, and if you move once and then you can fire a shot afterwards. But it's also like Valkyria Chronicles where you have to kind of aim your shot. But your character, like, just like a normal character aiming a gun, like, they kind of like breathe and they move their gun up and down. So it's hard. There's like gun sway. So it's hard to get it just right. And there'll be these tense moments where, like, you're like, okay, my back is to the wall. I need to get like an absolutely ace shot. Like, I activated the ability that lets bullets pass through enemies so I can hit multiple enemies with one dude, but I have to ricochet off this wall, and like it gets so tense and so fascinating. And I think that playing on higher difficulties on tactical games like really encourages you to think really hard about like when to turtle and when not. And it just, this game, I think, really, it really encourages you to kind of make full use of your full spectrum of abilities. And as Griffin said, like, every character has different sets. So it's just, there's so much going on, and it's, I guess I was very surprised to get that level of depth, which Griffin also alluded to, from such a small game, you know, it really, I mean, you know, I think whatever difficulty you choose, find one that feels tense, and then you'll be good, because yeah. Having that, you know, having those moments of tension was just so satisfying, and I was addicted to this game. I sunk like 25 hours into it in the space of, you know, I don't know, a week or two. And, you know, it was a busy couple of weeks. So it was really, really, really grabbed me. And, you know, I highly recommend it. You know, lots of character in the world, as Griffin already said. All the robots are really adorable and funny. Like, there's a fish robot.
Yep. yes.
All he says is glub.
Glub. Billy the fish.
Yeah, robot. And your captain will, like, go talk to him and ask him questions, and he'll just be like, glub. It's pretty great. And there's like a pessimistic whaling robot.
Yeah,
it's really great. And I it's funny because I hadn't really given SteamWorld Dig a huge chance. But I kind of want to go back and try it again because I was so impressed by this game. And also, go ahead, Griffin. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I really respect that it kind of lives in the same world, obviously, as SteamWorld Dig, where it's like the same art style. They'll reference like the robot farmers that are digging on different planets. And, like,
well, yeah, I think the SteamWorld Dig planet is like gone. I think it blew up or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But... yeah, it's cool because it takes those elements.
Spoilers.
And then, well, it's the beginning of the game.
I'm joking.
It takes those elements and kind of runs with them. It's like it alludes to the other game a little bit, and I guess the enemies maybe are similar. I don't know. I was just going to say also there's a free update coming January, which is awesome. But anyway,
what's coming January?
There's a free update for this game coming January, awesome. Which is going to add some stuff. So I'm pretty excited.
Okay, so like new levels.
I don't know. I'm guessing not a new campaign, but something, some kind of cool Easter egg. Maybe, hopefully a new character. That would really excite me if that's what the case is.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that pretty much sums it up for me, so pass it over to you, Griff.
Sweet. Oh, is it my turn? Okay, yep. Number 8. I have listed here Transformers Devastation.
Devastation?
Devastation. Transformers Devastation, here it is. This is why this game is on my list, and it's so good, because it has a dodge that's, like, just as good as a Bayonetta dodge, so therefore it's an excellent game.
Did you watch the ADGQ speedrun?
I haven't, but that is on my to-do list for sure.
Oh, it's super good. You're gonna like it.
Okay. Devastation, it's great. It does a lot of things super well, like reverence for the old TV shows with the art style, like the menus even are inside, like that yellow-ass orange ship. All, you know, of course, like, what else is Peter Cullen doing besides providing Optimus Prime's voice in everything still? So he's there. But just in terms of gameplay, like, what surprised me about it was it's loot-based, so that's kind of shocking. Was not expecting that. But it also just wears so much of, like, the Bayonetta design on its sleeve. Like I said, like, there's the dodge, like the Witch Time dodge, which when in this game, when you dodge, you get... the prompt to kind of like initiate a series of combos, which usually starts with you transforming into the vehicle and then just driving into the enemy, which is always great. Like playing as Bumblebee, like hitting a dude with a bunch of swords a bunch of times and then turning into the little Volkswagen Beetle and just driving headlong into this thing and smashing into him over and over again. Or like belly flopping them as a car and spinning your tires out on their chest is just a really like viscerally funny and awesome thing to have in a Transformers game. But again, keep coming back to the Bayonetta-ness of it is, you know, it handles really well. It's really tight. You can get into like what seems like intentionally created combo loops, and you know, with how challenging the game can be down the road, those are very helpful that they do exist and they didn't take them away. Let's see. There's a bunch of characters later. You unlock Grimlock, the dinosaur. So he kind of actually plays differently. And then it also does some really surprising things by doing like changing the level design up every once in a while. So like you'll do a top. There's like a mission where it's like a top down thing. You're cool. Running around this level in top down perspective, and you have to like transport items from one area to the other. And these items, it's like it's such an amazing like delightful Platinum Games style complete change of gameplay, but still living within the world that you're playing in. So it's like you find these Energon cubes, and then, well, it's really hard to fight things from this perspective, so you just throw the cube at things and it explodes, but it never goes away. So they're like, go get this thing, just use it and enjoy the top-down perspective and blow things up. Okay, go. And then they have like a racing, like a side-scrolling mission, couple missions on there. So again, perfect fit with, you know, Transformers and all that. Music's really rocking, really good. I don't know, like it's not like a fantastic game by any means. Like, it's not doing anything new or different. It's just taking those Bayonetta aesthetics and putting them into a Transformers world and like being a more reverent and better Transformers game than anything else yet.
Cool.
Awesome. You more or less sold me.
Yeah.
Also, there's Devastator, if you couldn't tell.
Devastator. Do I have to see all of the Transformers movies to be able to play this game? Do I have to watch the movies simultaneously while playing the game?
Jamie, you have to see the movies if you want to say you've been alive before.
You actually need to have all Generation 1 action figures if you want to play the game.
The toys to life, just for this game.
Mint in box.
My number 7 was Lara Croft Go, but I feel like Jeff actually completely covered what I love about that game. So would you be amenable to me jumping to 6, or should I just call it out and then we'll keep going around and then I'll get to 6 next?
Ooh, Griffin, you're the ref on this one.
Yeah. I gotta say, let's stick with 7. Mine's a short one, so I can tell you that it won't take long.
So I'll just, I guess if I'm going to say one thing about Lara Croft Go that that maybe Jeff, just to add to what Jeff said, is that somehow in that tiny little game that has absolutely no story whatsoever, I felt like I was on this like epic journey.
I know.
I don't know how they did that. There's only like fleeting moments of interaction with anything other than like the solid state of this world. But the world is crumbling, and there's this creature chasing after you. So even in this game where there's no timer, there's no time constraint, there's no feeling most of the time of you having to move quickly, I often found myself thinking like, oh crap, I got to run from this thing, or oh my god, the world is collapsing, we've got to get out of here. I don't know how it manages to evoke that emotion.
How many times did you say,
just kind
Jamie,
of like what it is on a tiny little screen, but... Yeah.
So how many times did you say, it's time to go? Lara Croft, go.
What? Griffin, whatever your amazing joke was, the internet swallowed it.
Everybody thought that was hilarious. Great. Okay, good. I'm going to jump back on the internet here and see if that helps out. But yes, that was a great joke. Thanks.
Griffin's internet good dies, why don't you do yours?
I'll do mine. Yeah, we'll keep trucking over here. So mine, and I don't want to exhaust everything there is to be said on this, because I'm sure it's on all of our lists. My number 7 is Her Story. And Her Story was probably the most unconventional game to make this list. You know, if you want to be stupid and kind of fall back on, I guess, gaming journalist approach, it's like the Gone Home of this year. It is a game that maybe at first blush is kind of like non-gamey, but it offers a really compelling and interesting experience and a very new way of interacting with games as a medium. Basically, all you do in this game is you have, like, a shitty search engine, and you use said shitty search engine to search for video clips, and you have to, like, build a story of what happened to the character in the video clips, kind of piecemeal. But the game, I think what I really loved about this game, first of all, I'll just say the lead actress turned in a phenomenal performance, and the writing is very spot on. But what I love about this game is seemingly, and I don't know, it, like some kind of magic, but the creator of the game somehow like knew what you were going to search for. So like I feel like you're steered in directions that you don't even realize you'd be steered in, and even if you kind of take a slightly alternate path, because the way the game works is you can search for a term and you get like the first 5 results. So the game does a really clever thing with kind of truncating your lists in order to make it hard for you to get the really juicy stuff. You have to put in, like, the right search terms. And somehow, like, you're, like, magically... Even though you come up with the search terms on your own, you're magically steered towards the solution and kind of, like, everyone gets there in about 2 hours. Like, I don't know how they do that. and it's just... no matter how you approach this story, it's fascinating to get. Even though, like, it's not... there is a narrative there, which if you had access to the tapes, you could watch them all in order. But the narrative is delivered kind of completely out of time. And somehow it just works. I think it's a really staggering achievement to you know, put together this footage, which is real footage, which exists somewhere. And then, like... Mm-hmm. Jumble it in such a way that no matter what piece you look at, you can still continue building the story. I mean, that to me is really impressive. And you know, even though it was a short little game over quickly, it has definitely stuck with me kind of for its really novel method of delivering narrative and the phenomenal performances. So
yeah,
that's my number 7.
I'm with you, buddy.
Yeah, I know. I bet it's high on your list, Jamie.
Yeah, it's up there.
Yeah. All right,
it's up there.
Go, Griff.
Okay, I'm going quickly. Girf. 7 is Dying Light for me.
Gotta try that.
How
game.
Bad is?
I want to play it okay, so good. Badly. Lag's better.
Are you a noob, Griff? Don't be a noob. In
I am a noob.
World.
I am not a noob. Dying Light's a great game. It does really good things with parkour. I'd say it's like, you know, I know both you guys really like Mirror's Edge, it really speaks to that angle. It plays like the parkour is developed in a lot more interesting way than it was in Mirror's Edge. Being able to just move around
the
environment.
No.
listen, there's guns and they don't suck.
Shut up. The guns loud.
The parkour is good, and there is like actual times in the game when it makes you parkour and not like a ham-fisted, okay, here's the parkour segment. Like, when it becomes nighttime, you should not be fighting anything. You should just be running to a safe house. And when you're doing that, you're only using your parkour skills and then, like, activating traps and stuff in the environment to essentially just slow down enemies, because you're not going to ever really fight them at the point, like, you know, through the majority of the game. It is very much like the Dead Island games, in that you can, like, get weapons, craft them, and add, like, crap onto them to make them stronger, but then inevitably you'll find something better, newer, later. So that's fine. I didn't mind that element. I think you guys didn't really care for it that much.
I didn't play it, so I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no idea.
And what's actually surprising in this game, so a lot of surprises, is the storytelling is pretty cool. Like, the premise is this country, this, like, Caribbean country, or no, what was it? Maybe it was, like...
Let's just show how racist we really are right
yep.
now.
What's that?
Let's just take guesses. So they're darker, so I don't know. The Middle East?
India. It's all India, guys.
Well, I remember there being a lot of, like, yellow in the color scheme of the world, so I was like, well, maybe it's, like, Brazil, maybe?
It's actually Russia.
Okay. Yeah. Well, present-day Russia, 2014, is that right, or 15? Whatever that year was. The great toilet modeling. Okay, so the reason why everybody is there is because they were supposed to be the host of the Olympic Games, and that's why you have people who are, like, parkour masters, because they were actual, like, athletes in who are going to compete in the games, and they're the ones that have kind of, like, risen up and leading these factions within this realm, like, helping people survive. And they do a lot of, like, in-game storytelling through missions, or people just, like, standing around. They're like, hi, well, let me tell you my story, and you can just walk away, or you can listen to them, and they're pretty good.
Is this by the team that did Dead Island, right?
Yes. I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe they split. I'm not certain, and I don't want to say one way or the other.
Okay. No, Griffin, commit right now.
It is came out in January of 2015, so that was a long time ago.
Can I just say, what a year for zombies? Because I was like, after The Last of Us, I was like, zombies are over. There's nothing more they can do with zombies. And this year they did so much with zombies and horror in general. Like, I haven't played this game, but I'm so excited to play it. I haven't played Until Dawn, but I'm super excited to play that. I might even wait until PlayStation VR comes out for Until Dawn, because I heard they had a CES demo for that.
Oh, really?
Using the PlayStation VR. And I'm like, that sounds freaking awesome.
Mr. Robot's in it.
Yeah, Mr. Robot's in it!
I saw him get his guts slashed open.
Oh, you played it?
No, I just watched a video of it.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Jamie, you want to take it away to number six?
Yeah, number six for me is Super Mario Maker, which I...
Shut your mouth, Griffin.
I played a little bit. I bought it when it came out. I played a little bit, and I said, this is terrible. I don't ever want anything to do with this. The level editor, to me, seemed so constrained. The levels that I was being exposed to on the, like, online element seemed just horrible. Like,
yeah, terrible discovery, like, unfortunately.
Exactly. And to me, I thought, like, all right, this is it. Like, it's just going to be autoplay levels forever or just super stupidly hard levels forever.
Right?
And this game is dead, and I don't know why anyone is talking about it. I went back to it in the last couple of weeks because the guys at Giant Bomb have been talking about it all the time, and I also saw some awesome games done quick with it, and the stuff they were doing on that looked incredible. So I went back to it. First thing I did was I went back to the course worlds and just saw what kind of stuff it would serve up to me, and I was so pleasantly surprised compared to the stuff that I was seeing at release. Like, now if you go into the 100 Mario Challenge and you just let it give you 12 or whatever random levels from, you know, people who are popular creators, and you play through those, I would say about half of them will still suck, but half of them are amazing.
That's like, pretty good, though.
It's so worth... and, you know, all you have to do is press the minus button for 3 seconds to skip through a level that you don't like. But some of the stuff I'm seeing on there is so good. And the thing I was alluding to earlier when I was... And the thing that I'm going to contrast it with in regards to Yoshi with is that some of the smartest levels that I've seen in Super Mario Maker are some of the levels where you can actually see the end of the level from the moment when you start.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just like one obstacle in your way, but it looks impossible. And you're like, okay, this level is just broken. How could Nintendo have served me up this level in a 100 Mario challenge? Like, this doesn't make any sense. And then you kind of like futz around for like 30 seconds, and then you realize there's like a way through this impossible seeming level. And so in that way, it's kind of in some ways become like a really fascinating puzzle game.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll look at a level and you'll say, there's absolutely no way I can get through there. It's just a wall. How the hell am I supposed to do this? And then you realize, no, there is one way, and it's going to be a challenge, but you can do it. And so a lot of these little, they're just 30, 60 second, like almost challenge levels where the level is just one screen. Those are the things that I'm having like the most fun with. And that encouraged me to go back and unlock everything. I did the stupid thing where you have to tell your Wii U that it's the next day. And that was really obnoxious. But I went through that. I unlocked everything. And now that I've unlocked everything and I've been fiddling with it a little more, I realize there's a lot of meat to that game. And I've made some levels, like, already, some preliminary levels. And I can tell that I'm going to have a lot of fun with it. There's a lot more promise to it than I originally thought. So that's why it's number six on my list.
I wish I was creative enough to make levels in that game.
You
But the ones I saw look incredible, though. Sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead. No. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that the stuff at AGDQ, so cool. I really want to dive back in and play more of that game because of that. So go ahead, Griff. Yeah.
I was going to say, it's kind of the same thing for me, where I want to give that game another chance, and I want to like it as much as everybody is liking it, because, you know, there's so much high praise for it, and you know, as time has gone on, it sounds like the cream has really risen to the top of quality games versus just, like, autoplay and nonsense, there's that part of me that's like, I should give it another go, but again, like, the thing that I keep coming back to, my biggest issue with that game is it doesn't... The physics aren't right.
But you're not really a Mario guy, Griff, are you?
Yeah, Mario World is, like, one of the best games ever.
Oh, snap. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, close to their new Super Mario physics, which I know are kind of a bummer for some people.
Yeah.
Because it's you get a lot more airtime, I feel like, in New Super Mario Brothers.
Sure.
Maybe. I don't know.
That's interesting.
It's not... When I play World, though, it's not World. And that's what... That was my first, like, initial... like feeling when I picked that game up, and I was like, oh, this is wrong.
That's really interesting, because I'm not an expert in this at all, so please take what I'm about to say with a grain of salt, but I feel like the different level, the different versions feel different. So I feel like when you play...
They are different. Okay. They are different.
They're different, but although people have looked at the physics and they're primarily the same. Like, there are differences, but it's surprising how similar they all actually are. And they don't actually use the respective physics from the games. So
That is a bummer. But when I'm, you know, just with my passing exposure to these various things, when I play, I can definitely feel the difference. And just, I hear like a scratching. Is one of you guys like something going on?
I think
on?
That's you, Griff, because I hear it too from time to time.
Yeah.
It's probably quality on my end, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So yeah, that's my number six. It was, I'm really looking forward to playing that game more. I think it's only going to get better.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm sure it will.
Yeah. Wii U, man.
I think some of the most fun that I had with that was when I was like building a level and then I'd pass it to a friend and he would make adjustments to it and then he would play through it and then he'd hand it back to me and we'd both be using the tablet to just like create and build on top of this one level we started with, and by the end of it, it was cool. It was like working on a project together.
Griffin, that's awesome.
It is not the tablet, it's the Wii U gamepad.
Excuse me?
It actually offers up experiences that would not be possible on a gaming tablet. So,
okay. I was on work on Friday. I overheard a conversation where it was, "Oh yeah, I got my son the Wii U. Or I think I'm going to get my son the Wii U. That's just a tablet, right? Like I can buy that tablet and then it'll just connect to his old Wii."
Oh no.
And this person who I work with is like, "Yep, that's how that works. You just get the tablet and it connects." And I was like, "Oh, this is not worth me saying anything
right now."
Nintendo
has nailed that messaging. Oh man. Hey, speaking of Wii U, my number six is also a Wii U game, and it is Splatoon.
Ah, sweet deal. It's mine as well.
Oh, awesome. We should take this one together then. I just want to say that for me this year, like every major multiplayer game that captivated the public this year has somehow also captivated me, which never happens. and this is not the only multiplayer game I have on the list, but what I love about Splatoon is it is a very novel approach to like the genre of like TPS.
Oh, basically. you get really into Five Nights at Freddy's, Jeff?
Is that a multiplayer game now?
Oh, in the way that you send it out on Twitch and people will communicate with you.
Oh yeah, sure, why not? anyway, so what I love about Splatoon is it's TPS, but it's TPS in a way that is like so Nintendo. It's like it has all the best Nintendo elements, but it somehow is also like esports, and it is like this perfect blend of like interesting mechanics involving like controlling terrain and kind of fun approaches to like shooting dudes in the face, which is kind of a weird thing to say, but it's just like it's colorful, it's creative, and the core gameplay, like you can hold back and work on covering territory if you don't like to fight,
yeah,
or you can get a
there's a job for you
and it doesn't have to be killing dudes all the time, but if you like killing dudes you can get in there, and killing dudes feels fun and accessible and kind of easy. Like it's a game that I kind of like immediately felt comfortable in, and that's really cool. It has kind of a cool control scheme involving using gyro, but it works. It works for me. but you can talk about that, Griff. It's so much fun, and there's so much new content coming down the pike all the time, which is awesome. For free. Very Nintendo of them to do. And I just, every time I play that game, I just have so much fun. There's a big, stupid smile on my face. Like, the music is great, the colors are fantastic, the squid girl has so much attitude, I love it. And I just like it. that's really all I have to say about it. You know, it's just a very successfully executed new IP, and, you know, I had a lot of skepticism about it when it was first announced. I was like, I don't care about this team-based shooter. But every time I play it, I'm like, this is amazing. It's so good. So, yeah, Griffin, you fill in the blanks there. Tell me what I miss.
Oh, sure. I would just start it off by saying, damn, it's a Nintendo-ass Nintendo game in the best way possible, where it's like it takes this tried-and-true convention and it just makes it really good in ways that are obvious but oftentimes like unexpected, because so often, you know, in the world of shooters, you're like, well, this is the way it is just because this is the way it always has been.
Yeah.
And, you know, Splatoon is like, no, like, if you're not good at shooting people, you can cover territory and still have a good time with this game. Like, you getting killed is not going to offset the entire, like, balance of the match, and you're not going to get a bunch of people screaming at you, mainly because there's no voice chat, but, you know, whatever. I really especially love, like, again, it's like a Nintendo surprise that's, oh, I keep saying surprise, but it's just that, like, perfection that Nintendo achieves where you reload by turning into a squid, but your squid is also a way to, like, hide from enemies, mm-hmm. move through terrain faster that you've painted, and it's just, like, so many things that make so much sense but have never been done before.
Griffin, I have a question for you. Uh-huh, are you team hot dog or team marshmallows?
I'm team travel to the future. Yeah, those events are kind of silly, and like the wrapper that goes around the game is really cool. Like the clothing,
oh, yeah.
and weapons,
the
and all that
with
stuff
all the adorable
that gets updated.
Dudes in them. Yeah.
Yep, just rotten with adorable Nintendo characters yes. everywhere.
I feel like
single yeah. player was probably the biggest weakness because I just didn't really get into it. Because, you know, maybe it's because playing the matches is so much fun.
I just
didn't want to do anything else but that.
I feel like it does a good job, though, as I kind of said before, of, like, being very Nintendo, but somehow, like, actually being, like, competitive. Like, I feel like that is a game that I can be proud to call, like, a competitive game. Like, I could see that game having a pretty great skill ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not, you know, on the level of the stuff that, you know, shows up, you know, MLG or whatever, but it is, you know, it's a serious game. Like, it is a serious game with numbers and stats and all that crap if you care, but it's also a really fun game. It just, I feel like it straddles that line super well, and maybe that's all changed. Maybe everything is crazy now, but when I was playing it, that's how I felt. So
when was the last time you played it?
Some time ago. So
mid-year?
It might have gotten pretty wild since then. I don't know.
Okay, I played it again in, like, August or so, and the biggest thing that I noticed was balances have been made. Like, weapons behave differently mm-hmm. based on, like, damage amounts they do. They've done a lot of things like showing you how many points you're getting when you're painting an area and you know, surfacing a lot of that information. Mm-hmm. And then kind of, like, so the fact that they're going in and making actual updates to this game and that are meaningful... I'm really proud of Nintendo for doing that.
They had to be dragged kicking and screaming, but it's mm-hmm. kind of, I feel like, especially because it was a title that was kind of spearheaded by some new blood, like they kind of gave some of their younger producers a chance to put together a game. It is a really interesting and fun look into where Nintendo might go in the future, and it's promising.
Yep.
So.
Very cool.
Awesome.
Great.
Jamie, number five.
Number five.
Okay, we're getting to the real meat of it now.
The real meat of it. And I bet this is going to surprise you, Jeff, but Invisible Ink is my number five.
Whoa!
Oh, damn.
I don't know if I'm surprised, but whoa! I didn't know you played it a lot, I guess.
Well, I played it, so I got it on your recommendation, and then I opened it up, saw what it had to offer, loved the art style, loved the vibe, but thought, this is just another one of those games that Jeff is really going to love, and I'm just not going to understand it. I'm not going to understand the appeal at all. As I was thinking that, I somehow beat it once. And I was like,
awesome.
Oh my god, how did that happen? And I was like, that was really cool. And for all the reasons that you guys already elucidated and I'm not going to hash over again. And then I was like, well, I got my fill. That was really interesting. I don't need to play it again. Oh, I beat it a second time. How did that happen?
Jamie, there's DLC out now, which adds new wrinkles. You should buy it. Go ahead.
And the only thing that I want to say that you guys didn't mention is that, or maybe you did, but I just want to emphasize that every time I play that game, it comes down to the last possible moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like I'm right on the edge and, like, one more thing could happen and I would just lose the mission. And I just end up dragging one of my characters through the door into the elevator at the last possible moment. I'm always on the edge of my seat. It's a great little game.
It's real good.
Cool.
I'm so glad you like it, Jamie.
Yeah.
I guess I'll hop into my number five, which is getting to something we haven't talked about yet. My number five is Metal Gear Solid V, and I want to give Griffin kind of more of the spotlight on this game, because I think it's higher on your list, Griffin. But I just want to say that Metal Gear Solid V is a game that it exemplifies the term, which is overused, of mixed bag. Like, it is a game where there are elements in this game which are incredible, and maybe have never been done, and maybe will never be done again. And then there are elements in this game which are just, like, the worst. mm-hmm. And they are all juxtaposed together into this kind of confusing package. I will say that the best thing about Metal Gear Solid 5, and this is important, is the way it plays. The way that game plays is just, like, incredible. It is the most fun you're going to have going around open-world stealthing. And, you know, open-world is kind of a bad word for some people. I think people who share kind of my interests, maybe Griffin or Jamie's interests as well. But
Open world is getting pretty tired.
It's getting pretty tired. And also, it's hard to have a focused experience in open world. But every mission I played in this game, even kind of some of the dumber ones, I just have so much fun. And I think that's because the tools you are given are so, like, expertly honed. And there's so much variety in, like, how you can approach any situation. Like, you have a place to go to, and you have a full 360 kind of plane where you can work on, like, finding a point of entry. And you can do all kinds of stupid things. Like, if you hate being stealthy, you can just airstrike everything and get terrible ranks on your missions. If you want to be stealthy, mm-hmm. you can have the most tense experience of all time trying to not kill anyone. Like, it is a game where you kind of set your own challenges sometimes. Like, I'll go in somewhere, I'll be like, okay, I don't want to lay hands on any enemy soldiers. Is this possible? And, you know, it's a game that encourages that. And it does definitely have some, like, wacky Metal Gear Solid nonsense, like, in terms of the plot side of things, like the hamburgers of Kazuhiro Miller come to mind. Really fantastic set of little voice skits. But I think that, yeah.
That is the positive side of that. And then there's also the negative side, which is the quiet in the rain scene.
Yeah. So the story is, yes. So there's these elements of the story, these little tiny pieces, which are fantastic. And then there's just the story at large, which is just, like, kind of terrible in a lot of ways.
On fire, pretty much.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like the story that nobody asked for in terms of concluding this series. The twists are all really weird and don't really land. There is one particularly compelling moment, I feel like, a mission where you have to do some shitty stuff to your crew, which is pretty cool, I thought. I don't know if that landed for you, Griff, but for me it did. So there is a moment where the game kind of tries to give you like a kind of like a No Russian type moment. But it actually, I think it lands pretty well.
It does. It just felt out of place.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
not in the game. I mean, just like chronologically incorrect.
Well, the problem is it's a game that was never really like finished, and once you beat the first chapter, which has narrative issues, no doubt, and you get to chapter two, the game makes all these promises, and then it's like, no, actually, we're not going to deliver on any of those. We're just going to abruptly end the game. So it's a game, I guess, where basically, you know, the core gameplay is incredible, and some of the Kojima oddities are there, and they're amazing. But then the story is just like a big turd pile, and some of the characters are just really unpleasant to deal with. Like, Quiet is just like, I can't, like, I wish they wouldn't do all the stuff they do with her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't want to spend too long on it, because Griffin, I think you'll have things to say, but we'll see. But yeah, that's kind of why it landed right in the middle of my list, because I had such a blast playing it, but it is definitely burdened by some of the issues of development that it has. And there's also the fact that, like, Konami is kind of fucking it up a little bit after the fact, like trying to steer players toward microtransactions, punishing players in single player mode for not storing their resources online where they can be attacked and they have to buy life insurance and all this other bullshit. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's still a game worth playing, but it got knocked down a few marks just because of its many development woes. So, anywho.
You know what's really a shame is that for someone like me, those things, even though I've talked to you guys about them before and you've assured me that they really shouldn't stand in my way, those kind of things sound so obnoxious that it's really preventing me from returning to that game. And I really want to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why, you know, I put it a little farther down the list. I think those things will prevent this game from reaching the people it could have reached.
Bad MGS 5. You know what you did.
I'm going to rub your nose in it. So, anyhow. Griffin, go!
Oh, leakage check? Everybody doing all right? Okay. So in the same vein as Jeff, I'm going to talk about my number 5, Rocket League, and then leave the door more open for him, because I'm sure that's a lot higher up and more important to you. Mm-hmm. So Rocket League is number 5. Again, this would have been something that I didn't really care about unless, Jeff, you pushed for it so hard. The quirkiness of just like all the pieces that fall into place make this game so much fun. It's like you know, flying acrobatic cars playing soccer is a really beautifully dumb premise that is, it has like an incredible skill curve that rewards like skillful play, but then if you want to just jump in and have some fun, it's something that you can do, or pass the controller to somebody who's never played before and, you know, watch them have a good time doing it. It's led to like me watching some cool replay videos, which I tend to not do ever for, you know, sports games, if you want to call this a sports game. I think the best comparison is calling this like the NBA Jam of this generation.
Yeah.
where anybody can kind of get in and have a goofy old fun time. And Jeff, as you mentioned, it is like, it's a multiplayer experience. It's the only way to do it. It can either go one of two ways, where you can actually engage with having like a microphone on, or like we do, playing all together and utilizing strategy that way, or not, and not using any kind of communication except for the in-game thing, which then just becomes like a goofy troll fest.
Nice shot.
And,
nice shot.
Yeah.
Nice shot.
See how quick you can get banned. Rocket League, it kind of just like swept me up, and it's a game that I can go back to and play every once in a while and have a great time with. I think it just kind of is like something that is of the moment. It's, but in a good way.
Mm. Yeah, cool. It's real good.
You can poop out dollar signs.
You can poop out
you hit that
and rainbows.
Yeah. You poop out a lot of
and
stuff.
And they play that hilarious like house music.
Yeah.
With the lady singing. There's always a lady singing.
Yeah, there is always a lady singing.
It definitely maintains some of that surreal stuff just the whole time. So.
And And I think some of the more fun moments for me is like playing it and then like the characters that come out of the world to me, because I'm not excellent at the game by any means, or good even. It's just when you're playing with somebody and then that person is like, okay, are they an AI or are they a real person? And then they become this like godlike entity in my mind where I'm crafting a story for them and like who they are and why Taco Mancer is so good at this game.
Taco Mancer.
But Taco Mancer is also so incredibly inconsistent that cannot actually be a human being.
Oh.
Yes. So Rocket League's great. I'll move it on to Jamie, because Jeff, I'm sure you'll want to talk about it more.
Yeah, I'll say a few more things when the time comes.
Cool.
Hit me, Jamie.
Okay. Cool. Four.
Hit me.
So number four is SteamWorld Heist.
Nice!
Yes.
I did not know came out. I did not hear about before it appeared mysteriously on my 3DS because of your machinations. But that game's incredible. You guys know that I'm a sucker for anything that in any way resembles Valkyria Chronicles at all.
And it does.
I know it does. And I know I started playing on normal because I thought, I just want to kind of see what's going on. And I'm totally going to beat it and then play it again on the hardest level, because this game is just right up my alley. I don't want to rehash what you guys have already said. I just want to emphasize that there are so many times where a level just seems completely impossible.
Mm.
But the best part about this game is I don't grind in this game. I just die, and then I think to myself, all right, what can I do differently? And usually it only takes one or two tries after that for me to make it through a situation that I thought was literally like I did not have the capacity to make it through. Whether it's focusing on the ads as opposed to the main boss, or coming at it from a completely different angle because the levels are procedurally generated, and you know, one time you might have a different avenue to get to a certain area of the ship than you had before. Like, it's just so interesting that you can come back to, it's an RPG that you don't need to grind for, but it's sometimes you feel like you're fighting like Ruby Weapon, and then the next time you feel like you're fighting just like three Shinra guys.
Yeah.
And it's just because of a change you made in the way you approached it.
Yeah. Such a great game. I'm so glad you guys both got a lot out of it, because it just grabbed me so much, and I'm really glad to hear that you guys both were grabbed by it too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Good year for strategy roguelikes.
For sure, yeah. Well, I wouldn't call SteamWorld a roguelike, but procedural generation seems to be the new hotness, so.
Oh, yeah, okay, true.
Anywho, I guess I'll jump to my number four, which is Bloodborne. Yeah, it is a Souls-like. It is a Souls-like made by people who made Souls games. So it's Blood Souls. Blood Souls is what we're gonna call it. So Blood Souls is a great game. It takes everything that was great about other Souls entries, and it kind of like speeds it up and makes it more actiony, and it makes it more tense. And it wraps it up in this kind of dark gothic world, which is a little bit of a departure from kind of the slow, plodding, medieval-y worlds of Dark Souls. And you have these awesome new weapons, which have a lot more depth to each individual weapon. You can do really...
Yo, Tog, I hear you like weapons in your weapons, so we tricked out your weapon!
Yeah, exactly. You have a sword that you can stick into a gigantic hammer, and it becomes a hammer. And it's fantastic. And even the act of... It's so cool, because it encourages combos. Like, even the act of transforming your weapon is an attack. So it lots of really interesting stuff going on there. And it's a game where you don't have to hold back so much anymore. You can really get in there, especially because you don't really have a way to defend yourself. And that was a very it was a very intentional decision on the part of developers. So in that way, you know, it really feels like it's got this intensity and this kind of give and take to it that I'm not sure that Dark Souls had. Dark Souls is more about waiting for openings, I feel like, whereas this game is more about get the hell in there and try to react on the fly when the enemy takes a swipe at you. And it's awesome for that. I think it's really fantastic. And I love the look of the levels, and I think the level design is tighter than it was in Dark Souls 2, in terms of, you know, having levels connect back to each other and stuff like that, creating shortcuts. I think what made this fall a little lower on my list personally, because, you know, Souls games are amazing to me. Like, I love Souls games, and it's possible this could have jumped to the very top of my list if it was, like, really what I was expecting and looking for. But I think what took it down a few pegs for me was that there was a lot of depth added to a number of items, but kind of as a result, the scope and the scale of what you're able to do with your character was somewhat reduced. And I think that a lot of types of weapons were eliminated. Like, you have a lot fewer choices. Some of the more interesting, like, stat options that would unlock different styles of play have been really pared down. Like, magic has been really cut back, and really only exists in the form of a few items that can do very niche things. I just think it's a game where, despite the fact that there's what you do have is incredible, it kind of feels like there are fewer possibilities. And I think part of that also boils down to having a more linear world. One of the cool things about Dark Souls for me was that you can go places that you're not really supposed to go. Like, you can go places that are, like, way high level and, like, run past enemies and try to survive and pick up a really cool item that you're not supposed to have. And I think that Bloodborne is much more tightly paced in that they don't really let you go to places that you don't, or that you're not supposed to go. Like, you can't like choose the character with the key and unlock a door that you're not supposed to and go into a really hard area and be like amazed by this crazy thing. And like, I feel like Bloodborne also kind of lacks the Dark Souls stuff where like you find the one random invisible wall and it like you break it and then suddenly you're in a completely new area which has like three more areas attached to it. I just think it kind of lacks that sense of like endless possibilities that I felt when I played Dark Souls. And that's why it moves down a little bit for me. But I think the combat is maybe the best it's ever been. So
absolutely. Yeah. I just a quick comparison. I think that Dark Souls is like a fencing match where you watch that. Like it's kind of like back and forth, very clever, calculated. And then I think that, like, you know, Bloodborne is like more of like watching like a Marvel versus Capcom game where it's just like so much crap is going on here. You know, just get in there and beat the crap out of it.
So it's a hell of a game, and highly recommended, but I did have a few minor grievances with it, which I think took it down a peg for me. But I'll go ahead and let you talk about what captivated you about it in a little bit, Griff. But go ahead, what's your number four?
My number four is Undertale.
I haven't heard about
I'm not
going to
talk about it. I'm going to just pass it
you're
on.
You're just going to send that ball down?
I'm not going to do it justice. I had a great time with it. It was, again, very, like, I got to it a little late, so I kind of, you know, knew of some things to keep an eye out for. But still, everything that it did really well.
Yeah, it's kind of a tough game to talk about, too. I don't know if I'll do it justice in here later, but we'll see.
I think it'll be appropriate when we have, like, a discussion about it, because it'll be higher up for you, I think.
Okay, yeah.
Moving on to the big three. Jamie, three. What's your
top three? For me, the top three in my list this year are like the real deal. Some of my favorite games of all time.
Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Dragon Age Inquisition.
Rise of the Tomb Raider DLC pack.
Smite.
Rise of the Tomb Raider, Lara's hair.
Dota 2.
Tress Effect.
For me, the number three is Her Story. And, it's the only one on my top three that I feel like I don't have too much to say about, just because you guys have already talked about it. And I feel like it's the kind of game where it's really short. If you watch like two clips and you don't feel like you're dragged into that story, then it's not for you. But I think that lady's acting is real damn good, and it's really interesting. The one thing I did want to say about it is that it's not quite video game VO acting, and it's certainly not quite like movie TV acting. It's like somewhere in the middle where she's like slightly histrionic, but just enough that it works incredibly well in this format, in the format where there's not multiple shots. It's just one camera that's on her at all times. And basically she's responsible for selling everything. Yeah. There's no music. There's nothing like that. And I just think it's such an achievement that somehow they matched up this incredible developer with this incredible actress and made this thing, which is completely unique. I don't think it could have worked with any other like actress or developer combo. That's why I think it's like really kind of an astounding thing, and it's number three on my list. That's all I really wanted to add.
You're so right though, Jamie. It is such a cool experience. I really think it's so cheap too. I think everyone should really play that game.
Yeah,
it's really interesting to experience, go through your first time. So I'll do my number three then. My number three is Rocket League. Griffin, I think, kind of already got the ball rolling on this. No pun intended there, none at all. But I'll try to drive the point home.
Nice. All right. I just shat myself. I've got leakage.
So I think Rocket League for me, I feel like I went through like the stages of Rocket League. Like Rocket League is a game when you first look at it, you're like, oh, it's the co-op of competitive multiplayer games. I get it. And you play it like that, and you have the best time ever. And you're like, oh, the ball randomly bounced into the net from across the field. It's hilarious. And then you keep playing it, and you're like, oh my god, actually, I can like control this absolute madness kind of. And you start to learn some techniques, and learning techniques in that game is so rewarding because you feel like you're like taking control of the insanity. I feel like you're exercising some level of influence over this madness that is happening in this world, and it feels great. It feels really like powerful and awesome to do that. And I'm by no means like an expert at this game at all. Like there are people who have learned how to make their car fly and hit the ball like way up in the air, and like. Griffin alluded to the videos, which are just absolutely insane, and it speaks to how high the skill ceiling is on this game. And the thing is, when you first play it, like, unless you've watched, you know, all the MLG strats videos or whatever, like, you don't realize that this is a game with an insane skill ceiling. You just think it's a goofy time, but it actually has so much going on in terms of just, like, incredible physics and, like, just incredible, I don't know, and it's just... I mean, it's so stupid and great to just have, like, be driving a car around and playing soccer with it. It doesn't take itself too seriously in terms of the concept. But again, it still manages to have that depth. And I think the reason that I put it above Splatoon personally is that it's kind of a, for me, I guess it's like a pure experience. Splatoon has a lot of great stuff grafted onto it. But I feel like Splatoon isn't a game that I could just really easily just, like, load up and immediately be playing and, like, playing with the best equips you could have, and like playing the most like developed form of the game. Like Splatoon, you want to level your character up, you want to unlock stuff. This is just a game where all you unlock are like stupid ornaments for your hood,
which are great.
I mean, they're a great time, but they're like totally extra. Like you unlock a dumb hood ornament, you unlock, you know, you brown gas comes out
different
of the back
flame
of your car.
Trail.
You know, your horn is like wah, 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 or something, and that's your unlock.
A different model for the car that doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, although maybe it makes some people very minor difference. Yeah, maybe the shape of the car has some effect on.
I'm just proving my noob status by saying that.
I don't actually know. I mean, I don't really care. I just choose the one that looks the dumbest because that's fun in that game. But I guess it's just a game that it manages to feel like it grabs you from the outset with its kind of party game feel, and then you can keep sticking with it because it has that long tail, it has that depth kind of, and I can just load that game up and have a hell of a time and just laugh and feel powerful when I succeed and not feel bad when I don't because it's so stupid. So yeah, that's why it's in my top three. I think
such a tightrope to walk, and they nail it.
They do. I'm really happy that game has been so successful. So,
and it's like significantly different than its predecessor, right, Jeff? Like in meaningful ways.
I have no idea.
I thought you played Acrobatic Supersonic Arrow.
Jumpin' Jack Flash is a gas cars. Gas. Yeah, no, I never played that one. Okay. So I really have no idea. It is interesting that game existed and did not get the kind of buzz that this game got, because I thought they were relatively similar in their premise, but I don't know anything about it beyond that. So, yeah,
nice.
What's your number three, Griff?
Good three. My number three is Metal Gear Solid 5.
Whoa!
Surprise!
I was trying to remember how Sins of the Father go, but I can't remember.
Oh yeah. So you said it really well, where it's just a game that it does so many things so right and so many things so wrong that, you know, it kind of shit the bed and didn't make the best game of the year because it does away with the things that I love about Metal Gear Solid, which is the storytelling and like the kind of the goofiness that goes along with that, and like, you know, the fetishistic reverence for like military hardware and sci-fi futurist nonsense, and just in the way that this game is mechanically, you kind of couldn't have that. And the solution that they went with, that Konami went with, or Kojima went with, is it traded story for the fantastic mechanics that it did introduce into the series, which, as Jeff, you said, like the open world nature of the stealth missions, like the multi-pronged approach you could take to solving a single objective. Like you can even repeat missions and like, you know, go about it a different way. But having it like as an episode instead of like a through line that does not ever let up is like contrary to the Metal Gear way.
Yeah, in my mind. It's all self-contained. It's weird.
Yeah,
it's all like out of time.
Now it also does interesting things with that mechanic, and with like the interludes in between missions, because of course you're going back to your base to level up and buy new equipment or change your outfit or something like that, and so there is a reason to actually go back there, and then it will prompt an interesting cutscene or a little whatever.
It is weird to get to a boss battle though, and then it's like continued in the next episode, and then you can go back to Mother Base and just chill for like 5 hours.
really weird. I mean, but then it also does cool stuff where it's like you go to a mission and then it's like interrupted by another mission. Neato.
Not enough though.
I mean, and you know, the back half of that game where it's just like, do these missions, but they're kind of harder. Okay, cool.
We ran out of money.
I mean, there's literally a gaping hole in that game.
Konami deactivated our bank cards.
And you know, Jamie, you said like you're worried about the kind of the negative sides of things. Like, I think that's totally justified, because at this point, I have no interest in going back to that game.
Yeah.
Except for just, like, shooting the rocket fist or pooping, making my horse poop on me. Like, there is absolutely no reason to go back to it, because, like I said, I go to Metal Gear for the story, and I stay for the interesting things it does mechanically, and I feel like now that's flipped. So it's, you go to play it because of the fantastic stealth mechanics, but it's not a Metal Gear game anymore, in my eyes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Fultoning dudes and bringing them to your base is freaking sweet and addictive, and, like, the base management things are give or take, but, you know, what it allows you to do with, like, it makes Peace Walker into a better, like, more real game than Peace Walker ever was. And, like, the story twists are weird and not in a great way. And, Jeff, as you said, like, the Chapter 2 bullshit was a real letdown.
But also kind of hilarious in retrospect.
Also, yeah, absolutely hilarious and like, trolly, but also just like
sad,
so weird and not in like a cool way.
No, it's, I mean, it's just sad, you know. I mean, who knows how much better it would have been had it not been sent out, you know, in a half finished state.
You know, I
think
it's easy to speculate and say, like, oh, you know, Konami, all that stuff is going around at that point. Like, still, you know, this is the game that's out,
exactly,
and this is the game that I played, and I think that I had a better experience than somebody who might pick it up right now, because I didn't have to deal with all that online nonsense, and like, the servers were down for me, so I just didn't have to worry about any of that invasion crap with the mother base, forward operating base, and things like things of that nature.
Also worth noting that, like, just because your game is unfinished and you have to deal with your budget running out, like, one of my favorite games ever is Xenogears, and that is a game where your second chapter is just spent listening to people tell stories while they sit in chairs. Like, you can still do something with, even with your budget not being there, and what they chose maybe wasn't the best choice, so.
Yeah.
Like, the schizophrenic storytelling that game then, like, starts into a full sprint towards the back half of that game, it's just insane. Like, it is literally insane.
So many plot loose ends for a series that will never continue. All resolved in the pachinko release.
Yes. Pull robot arm and it all makes sense.
You know what's really odd to me? I don't think I can think of another game where the critical consensus and the fan consensus is so aligned. Like, it seems like everyone talks about this game in the same way, and it's exactly the way that you just described. I actually yesterday found myself at a barcade in Brooklyn, and as I was going to town on the Frogger machine, a dude next to me was going to town on the Star Wars cabinet, the one where you can, like, get in a lightsaber battle and also do Hoth
and all that
good stuff. Mm-hmm. And we ended up talking about Metal Gear, and he said the exact same things. It's like everyone feels the same way. It's so fascinating.
Yeah, it is really interesting, actually, now that you say that. I mean, some people will defend the shitty story to death, but it does seem that there's a lot of consensus about where this game went right and where it went wrong.
Oh yeah, and I think you'd have to be crazy to deny the quality of mechanics that this introduces into, like, the Metal Gear bloodline.
Yeah,
like, you know, it's doing things that have never been done before, and it does it really well.
Yeah,
which is why it was so high for me on my list. Like, I cannot deny that I was having a ton of fun playing it. It's just, like, it's not the Metal Gear game I wanted.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it, Griffin.
I will go back to it, for sure. There was enough there that I was thoroughly impressed. And that first sequence, where you're in the hospital, I loved that. That's just bonkers.
Yep,
I love it, too. Look forward to not much more of that.
See, that's what I've heard.
Look forward to that getting a little old.
Yeah, you see it again later.
I wrote down cool characters, and I don't know why I wrote that down.
No, I don't know if I agree with you on that, Griffin.
They all suck.
Otacon Senior is the worst character of all time.
I would like to talk to you about that at some point, because I've been thinking about that. Yeah. maybe it's because I don't know the specifics, but yeah, I want to chat with you.
Yeah, we should.
About that character. yeah, everybody sucks in that game. Maybe D-Walker is all right.
D-Dog.
I mean, you mentioned it earlier, like, Quiet is gross, and some of the things they do with her is like, unappealing. But I think, like,
She gets her moment.
She does have some pretty good moments in that game, and like, it's really unfortunate that she's just like almost naked the entire time.
Yeah.
which, you know, for a character that has no dialogue, she has like, I don't know, she has. Maybe it's just in contrast to how awful everybody else is in that game that, like, I'm like, oh, there's actually something there. She has an arc. Interesting.
I mean, she has an arc. I think, yeah, it's just unfortunate that, like you said, she doesn't talk and she's all tits. Like, it's like, you can't put those two things together. Like, if she's walking, if she's a walking bag of tits, then she needs to, like, at least have dialogue. You know, like, you can't just be like, okay, the women in my games, they don't talk and they walk around and look good.
Right. I mean, even DOA gives them dialogue.
Right? Yeah. Oh, I love Zach Island. Now let me put my sunscreen on.
So good. So that's all I have to say about MGS5. I didn't do any of the multiplayer either, so there we go.
Yeah, me either. Fuck that.
Yeah, maybe.
My number two. We're getting up there, guys. We're climbing.
Uh-huh. Good stuff.
You know what it is. It's Life is Strange. You knew that already. Because I love that
Oh,
game.
Awesome. I knew it was going to be on here somewhere.
Yeah. That was supplanted by my number one, which I'll talk about in a little later, just this week. But I've already talked to death about this game with you guys, so I'll just highlight a couple things. I'll highlight the fact that there are multiple story elements that end chapters where I think to myself, okay, this clearly has to be part of the main story. Everyone will experience this. And then I get to the end of the credits and it shows you, you know, the choices you made in relation to the choices that everyone else made. And you realize that the thing that you thought must have been a permanent, like, fixture of the story is a
right.
quote-unquote choice. What's amazing about that is two things. Obviously, the fact that they're taking the time to write, like, massively divergent storylines to cope with the fact that there are these huge branch points. And the other fascinating thing about that is that this thing that I didn't think was a choice was a choice. And it was actually informed by lots of little choices that I made throughout the episode, which, like, really fulfills the promise of that type of game, unlike so many games that come before it, where you're making all these little throwaway choices from time to time. You're not really sure if they're going to culminate in anything.
Hmm.
You finish the game, you're still not sure. And in this, it's like, oh my god, I can't believe that could have changed. And you can't even think what you could have done differently, because it's just the culmination of so many choices along the way. I think the art style in that game is great. The soundtrack, while it's not a soundtrack made for that game, is a compilation of some music that I already knew I loved, some music that I actually discovered from that game.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's not a huge, you know, list of songs, but the songs are employed at, like, really deftly at really specific times in really specific scenes where it could benefit from there being music. Most of the game, there is no music. And I actually think that that's a good choice. A lot of the scenes are very lonely. A lot of the scenes are very, like, sparse. And I think that as, you know, game consoles get more powerful, that's something that we're moving away from. And I really miss those days of, like, a really sparse environment that isn't so densely populated and feels lonely. And this is a game about loneliness and, like, adolescence, betrayal. And it tackles, in addition to those themes, it tackles some bigger themes in, like, a relatively sober and nuanced way, like rape and, like, hazing and, like, security, like being, like, surveillance versus freedom and things like that. There's a lot of stuff that it touches on. I really encourage you guys to finish it. The last episode is very linear. Very, very linear, and a lot of people say that that's a letdown. I don't think that's a letdown. I think that the game fulfills its promise of giving you all these choices and having this huge variation in the narrative in the first couple episodes, and I think that the last linear episode is a great way to bring everything home and tie it up. So,
that's everything you say about this game, Jamie, just makes me so excited to finally get to play it. I purchased it, but I just haven't gotten to it yet, but I wonder how it would have landed if I had finished it, because it just sounds so awesome.
Do it. You play this game.
I did play the first episode a while back, and I really, like, I, the rewind mechanic, because this is the Don't Nod people that did Remember Me, and the coolest thing about that was, like, solving these little puzzles, like, manipulating time. They take that and transfer it over into this game and do something that, which is, you know, what I didn't care for in The Walking Dead or the Telltale stuff, where it's like, you make a decision, so-and-so will remember that. You're like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
So, speaking of which, I can't wait to talk about that later. In this game, you make your decision, and then you click a button, and you can rewind and take that decision a different direction. And I love that so much, because I can kind of see which way things are going, and I can, like, it's like, well, I didn't expect that to turn out that way, and then I'll rewind it. It's like, oh, that's even worse. I'll go back to the first one. Okay. But from what Jamie, you said, it tackles a lot of themes. One thing that I heard in discussions of this game is there's a point in which you experience a helplessness. I don't really want to say much more about that.
So good.
Because I want to save that for you, Jeff. That sounds amazing. Like, I cannot wait to play more of this to experience that moment in the game.
You literally just gave me chills, because I literally had forgotten about that. I think that's in episode 4 and/or 5. And, God, for some reason, I'm thinking of the end of Metal Gear 4, where you're just crawling, and it's just an interminable distance, and you're like, I hate this. This is so agonizing, like, but it's so scene? Good. Yeah, the microwave scene. But,
it's,
like...
I want to play it because it's one of those rare moments where mechanically a game does something that is both, like, counterintuitive and subversive, but then works so well inside and outside of the game.
Yeah.
I'm excited, guys. Y'all make me so excited.
And I'll tell you, the thing that's holding me back from playing it is... I don't want to play it on the PC, but I already did the first episode on the PC.
Sure, but just buy the thing when it goes on sale on PS4. It'll be cheaper than buy the other episodes on PC.
I know. I just have to rush through that first episode.
Redundant ownership.
And it does that thing that I love that so many pieces of fiction failed to do properly. Oddly enough, Jessica Jones on Netflix is doing it, and Final Fantasy VIII did it, where the bad guy... isn't so bad, and you're gonna get to know them, but they're still bad. Like, I love really fleshed out bad guys.
Good villains with, like, real motivations.
Yeah. Good villains that are compelling, that you want to like. You find yourself being drawn into liking, and then you realize, like, oh no, they're actually still shitheads. But, yeah.
I'm excited, too, very much.
All right,
I'll do my number two. Which is Invisible Ink. And this is a game that I did not think would be as high as it ended up. And I'm still like, I don't know, man. Like, this game. Like, it is a game that I didn't expect it to be what it... Again, kind of like Steam World. I didn't expect it to deliver in the way that it did for me. But it just keeps dragging me back. And, you know, Griffin already said, you know, kind of some of the stuff that's compelling about it. And Jamie, you touched on it too. Kind of that tension that you feel. You know, you always have to make choices in this game. You always have to make choices that are not always great and that just feel dangerous. Like, you'll put, you know, in order to take out a guard, you'll have to put yourself near another guard that could, like, possibly shoot you. Or, like, maybe you have to tactically get yourself shot to win a mission, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, this is a game where if you think that you're going to go through every mission, getting every treasure chest and, like, you know... killing or, like, taking out every guard, no, you're not. That's not possible in this game. Even on like the lowest difficulty, it's not easy. But once you start scaling up the difficulties, and that's kind of what I did. I started at the lowest difficulty, and I just kept... The game kind of encourages you to keep trying the harder and harder one. You start having to make these, like, insane choices, and it's just, like, it's so edge of your seat. It's a game where you have to play defensive, but you have to run because you're always racing against the clock and you're constantly fighting those two things. And you have to be stealthy, but sometimes you have to fire your loud ass gun and it needs to count. And, like, everything is viable. Everything is important. Like, there are no, like, every little move. And another cool thing about this game is that it's a one hit kill type game. So if your character is spotted, next turn they're going to be shot and there's nothing you can do about that. So, at any moment, you could just lose it all. Like, your whole mission could fall apart, and it's never safe until everyone is out. because it's always upping the ante. You know, the alarm timer is always incrementing, and more obstacles and enemies are being added. You know, enemies will have new wrinkles, like they'll have armor, which makes it harder to kill them or take them out. You might have to work. You might have been grown accustomed to knocking out all the enemies, but maybe this level is so flooded with enemies that you can't do that without risking your being discovered. Because if you knock an enemy out, then they'll wake up alerted, so you need to run around them. Or maybe they can't be knocked out because you don't have the right tools. And then that's kind of leaving out the whole other element of depth to this game, which is that there are a lot of different characters. So this game is a roguelike, which you guys maybe haven't touched on as much, but this is a game where you have different characters which function as your classes, and depending on who you choose, the game feels so much different. And like, you know, you'll have some characters which are really good at getting power for your hacking systems, so you'll lean very heavily on like hacking stuff in order to get around it. You have some characters which are much better at combat, which will kind of push you in that direction. And then even when you make choices in this game, like you choose your first two characters, your other characters are randomly thrown at you, and you might not even get other characters because, like, you have to wait until a rescue operative mission comes up. So it's just a game where you have, like, just the right amount of control, and then it throws all this randomness at you, and you're expect, and it's like good randomness. It's not like stupid randomness, but it's like really nice procedural generation that creates these opportunities for making just really tough choices that really matter. And Jamie, I can totally relate to that kind of feeling of like, I beat the mission, but like somebody just died, and like when you get to the final mission, like it almost feels like you're like trying to race across the finish line, but it just keeps moving a little bit farther away, and you're like, oh my god, and you're like, okay, screw it, you know what, you're dead, Decker, I'm gonna kill you, I'm sending you back. You're gonna sacrifice yourself to save everyone else, and you send one guy back there to like set off all the overwatches, and then you just book it out of there. And it's so tense, and it feels so meaningful, even in a game that you can repeat over and over again. And for that, I think it's one of the best games of the year for me for that. So that's my spiel on Invisible Ink. You can tell I get passionate.
Well said. You know, all of us really like that game quite a bit. So I'm happy to hear that there's like that kind of strategy roguelike situation is able to, like, those games are continuing to get better, and like presenting you with a challenge that you enjoy and doing new things. Because I, you know, I'm happy for you, Jeff.
Well, it's nice because Clay has been updating it. There have been a series of free updates which have added some new items, and there was also a DLC, which I'm actually working through now, and it just keeps getting more and more interesting. And I really hope that this isn't the end of support for the game, but even if it is, I mean, what's there is just so interesting and so loaded with depth, so I highly recommend. Griffin, hit us.
Yes, sir. Okay, number two for me is Bloodborne.
Whoa!
Yes. So I kind of was waffling between Bloodborne and Metal Gear on my two slot, but, you know, Jeff, as you said before, Metal Gear Solid has those flaws and deserves to be punished. And it just, I mean, as a package, I enjoyed Bloodborne more so than I did Metal Gear. So that's why it ranks up a lot higher for me. And Jeff, you said lower on your list because of, you know, kind of like the limited, more linear experience. I don't really have a problem with that. I do respect Demon Soul games for having that like more connected world that's bigger and grander.
Demon Souls is more like Bloodborne in that it's kind of more stage driven. And it's well, there are definitely connections in the world. More Dark Souls.
Yes, I mean, and if you want to look at each, I don't know. It's not worth talking or like trying to defend that side of it, but I think that Bloodborne is a new thing and it's different from those other games, and where it missed the mark to you, I am willing to give it a pass because it's like, it's your first attempt at this, so, you know, it's fine.
Also, just because it missed the mark for me doesn't mean that like, just because it's a more tight linear experience doesn't make it bad. I mean, you could praise its difficulty curve, you know, you could say it's better at leading the character around. Those are all good things.
Yes, absolutely, and where I think that it missed the mark of, you know, having like those interestingly connected realms. What it did that I love so much is it kind of always had this like, not ominous, but Like, I always thought there was something more.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and because it was so linear, I'm like, there has to be something more going on here. And when you hit that point in the game when it's like, oh, crap, like, this is something. Like, okay, so when you go to the cathedral thing before you fight the lady werewolf, what's her name?
I can't remember right
Lucille
now.
Lucille or something.
Something
like
Lucy or something. I can't remember right now.
Yeah. You walk outside and you get like, you go and click on or pick up that item in the corner, and then suddenly you're like surrounded by blue light and floating through the air, and then you get dealt like a massive amount of damage and fall down.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell is that? Yeah. And that's one of those moments where it's like, okay, there is more going on in this game than it is initially letting on to.
Well, I think it,
and that yeah. that is where I think that this game is really phenomenal, and I like that. If you want to give, like, if you're saying Dark Souls are cool games because of how the world is so interconnected, I think Bloodborne, if you want to give that a characteristic, it's that there is something more than meets the eye at all times. Like, there is something goofy going on mm-hmm. behind the scenes.
By the way, Vicar Amelia was who we were thinking of.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. Amelia.
I was going to say, I think it also needs to be praised for its sound design. Like, I think that it does a great job of dropping these little audio cues, which make you feel like there is something going on that you can't see. Like, mm-hmm. I'm specifically thinking of the baby crying that you hear.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And, like, the howl of the cleric beast, the first boss that you hear when you we go through mm-hmm. the first world. It does a great job of just, like, creating these kind of unsettling pieces of audio that aren't fully understood or explained, and then mm-hmm. kind of subtly fleshing those out later. And I think that it does a really good job of kind of just giving you this sense of foreboding, like, what am I moving towards?
That
it's very
echo
cool.
on everyone's voice is so good. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's kind of classic Soulsy talking and dialogue where people sound like they're like not entirely there. You're like, what is going on? Yeah. So it's very cool.
It's a cool game, and what I also really liked was just like how the combat was sped up so much mm-hmm. that I didn't feel like once I was able to let go of like playing carefully and cautiously and kind of just go harder at it, I felt like I was having a better time. Mm. And, you know, my personality, I enjoy that more, and being able to just kind of jump into something and do it more reactionary than strategically. That worked out well for me. I think there was like 2 points when I was playing the game that I was like, I hate you, I have to leave, and I walked away from it for a while. And
wasn't Rom was one of those points for you?
Rom was one of those points
who
for
I beat
me.
On my first try.
Yep.
And then I got stuck on a boss that you beat on your first try, so it was just kind of give and take.
Mm-hmm. And then there was the later optional boss that fucked me over forever. Mm. And that was just so annoying. But, you know, in the game's defense, I didn't have to do it to complete it. And the hunters, like, when you would engage in combat with these other people who had, like, your same skill sets.
They could parry and stagger you?
Yeah, like, it was delightful, because now I'm not fighting a gigantic, unfair, nasty death creature. Like, I'm fighting my equal. And those fights, like, they were extremely challenging.
Yes, they were.
But they never... I never... Well, there was one that I thought was pretty unfair, but some of the, like, for the most part, they all felt cool.
Yeah.
And like a nice change of pace and flavor from fighting these like gigantic werewolf things that it was just like, I'm gonna just beat the crap out of this thing's left foot.
Yeah. Well, they were kind of like the invaders, like the NPC invaders in the old games, but they felt more organically integrated with the world. I feel like they felt like they had a reason to be there. Other than just like, blah, 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 has invaded your world. And you're like, okay.
Yeah. And, you know, after I finished it, I did read up on some things, and it's like, oh, I actually could have done this. That's fascinating if I could have went that way. Mm. And then this character is no longer hostile towards you. Like, that's really cool. Like, you can... It's some neat stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, this game has its problems. It's mean. There are moments that it's like, this is incredibly unfair. But I think it was like made the victory so much more sweet to actually get through that and mm-hmm. overcome those, like, the blood-starved beast and be like, you are just awful. Like, you are you just automatically kill me, don't you? Huh?
Somehow the blood-starved beast becomes so easy. It's, how do they do it in those Souls games? Once you figure it out, it's like, oh, this is not hard at all.
Yeah.
Except in the rare case where it's, like, still unfair. But they do a really good job of having those Mega Man-style bosses that seem impossible until they are utterly trivialized by just skill.
Mm-hmm.
Not even, like, mm-hmm. breaking them, just pure skill. It's crazy.
Yep. And, you know, I love the final boss fight. I think that, you know, the lead up that you're given going towards it, where you're just, like, battling these ridiculous things that are just, like, hilariously grotesque and
Lovecraftian.
And Lovecraftian, but just, like, you know, it's like, okay, here's the Final Fantasy escalation to where we fight God. Of, you know, now we're fighting this gigantic Tetsuo Okira monster thing. And then to finally get to that end boss, and you're like, oh, damn, okay. Like, good one. Good choice, video game. I really appreciated that. And you know, it's a game, Jeff, as you praised, Rocket League 4, where it, you know, it has that difficulty curve that, and then that skill ceiling that's like, okay, well, I am getting beaten down mercilessly by this person. I need to walk away, readjust my tactics, and then reapproach, because I can beat this thing. It's just a matter of, you know, maybe changing my strategy and playing a little bit more skillfully instead of, like, just all mashy.
Mm-hmm. You said
it's a good game.
It is a good game.
All mashy.
Mm-hmm. All mashy is my stage name.
That's how I describe my rap sex name. Life to my therapist. It's all mashy.
All mashy, young money.
All right, we've come to the number one spot, Jamie.
All right, guys.
I think this will be interesting.
Yeah, okay. My number one game of the year is Dragon Age Witcher 3. Witcher 3.
You little sly dog.
There's a joke. It's a joke because they're, like, the same.
wait.
So, yeah?
Which one's the joke?
Witcher 3 is my game of the year.
Oh, okay, good.
Dragon Age Inquisition was my personal game of the year last year.
and mine.
I remember.
So for me, this game fulfilled the promise that Fallout 4 completely failed to deliver.
It's the black sheep being playable? We haven't talked about yet.
I noticed that it's on neither of our on any of our lists, and that makes me very happy, actually. Yep. But speaking of, I mean, you guys mentioned earlier, like, that elusive, focused experience in an open world. You guys will probably disagree on me on this regard, but I really think that The Witcher 3 delivers just that. These areas are huge, and you have so many quests, but because each quest is so realized, the characters in all of these little throwaway quests are so interesting. The cinematics for all the quests, just those throwaway moments of, like, Geralt getting off of his horse and, like, going and talking to somebody, those are so thought through, more so than any other open-world game like this than I've played before. It really makes it feel like, instead of being a huge open world where I'm just going from disparate point to disparate point, it feels like I'm somehow on this, like, invisible path that I'm creating. And each of these experiences that I'm having is like a complete little, like, episode in a larger, vaster world. I have a bunch of notes. They are in no order whatsoever, but I'll just run through them real quick, and I'll just say a bunch of the things that stand out to me about the game. I was thinking about this today in regards to the monsters that you encounter in the game.
Mm-hmm.
There's something really interesting in regards to that this game does, which games have a lot of trouble with. The worst offender in this regard is like the classic Gears of War thing, where the game tries to tell a really compelling story, but the game has no way for you to engage with your enemies in the world other than just killing them. Mm-hmm. So in Gears of War 3, when Dom's wife becomes like the evil people, he has
spoilers.
No way. He has no way of dealing with her.
Maria!
No way of dealing with her other than shooting her in the face.
Other than biting her shiny metal ass.
Exactly. And, like, this game is one of the few where sure, you're going to kill a lot of monsters. It's called the Wild Hunt. But there's a lot of quests in this game. Not necessarily the main quest, but huge thought-out quests where you deal with enemy specters where the game will actually let you kill them if you make different choices. But in a lot of these side quests, you can deal with these monsters by like taking care of the reason why they're still on this earth. Like, there's one quest where you're dealing with the ghost of this one woman, the daughter of a noble who was killed when their castle was raided. And depending on what you do, you can either end up just fighting her and killing her, or you can find her, like, loved one and lay her bones to rest. And then that's it. You get the same amount of experience regardless of which you do. And
that's great.
The same with one of the main quests with the Bloody Baron. You have an option whether you can just kill this monster, which has a connection to the Bloody Baron, which I won't spoil, or you can, like, work with this monster to further the quest and help you on other quests down the line.
That's awesome.
It's like, yeah, it's a completely different way of going about that. And it makes sense, because this is The Witcher. He has a bestiary, and he should know about how to deal with these enemies other than just hacking them to pieces, which he can do. But this game gives you a lot of opportunities to not do that, which I think is really cool.
Hey, you know what game? You know what game doesn't do that?
What?
Fallout 4.
Yeah, and Jamie, I just want to add on quick too, that bestiary you mentioned, like, in so many games, I enjoy reading or having the codex read to me out loud, a la Mass Effect, but in Witcher, like, you're like, oh, there's some wraiths over there, I'm gonna go fight them, and then you're like, oh shit, I gotta go read my book here before I fight them, because the game won't tell you, like, oh, this has its symbol, it means it's weak to this. It's like, no, okay, open the book up, read the book says these are this thing's weaknesses, and then sometimes it's not even as obvious, like, it might be more hidden in the text, and then there's like a symbol, you know, later after you kill one or something like that, that says, oh, you use this kind of potion to make your sunlight potion on your sword to kill this night wraith or something like that. But, you know, you may be reading it and it could say something like, these things only come out at night, or these things, like, are weak to some other herb or something like that, that you can then give you a clue on how to make this potion.
Exactly. I really appreciate that. And, like, when a quest objective is to read the bestiary about this monster, or to find this book and read this book about this monster, for some reason I could easily see that just really being incredibly annoying, but for some reason in this game I literally look forward to that. Like, I'll see an enemy on the horizon, I won't even know what it is, I'll be like, oh, that kind of looks like a drowner, like, I guess I should read my bestiary and, like, brew this oil and then douse my sword in this oil and then have this spell queued up so I can take him out.
Can I offer a counterpoint to that?
Mm-hmm.
Reading is tough, not mean.
Indeed.
This is the most inside jokes.
I have too much to say and I don't want to waste time, so I'm gonna just start, like, I'm just gonna run through all this.
Just railroad it.
Railroad it.
The writing is so good. Every quest feeds back into the larger narrative of this war which is going on, and unlike so many games, this game does not glorify war. War in this game is terrible. It's the reason why everyone in this game hates their life, and it feeds into every single quest. Like, I'm on a quest right now where there's a bunch of kids hiding in the woods with this crazy lady who may or may not be a witch. And the reason why they're hiding out with her is because they're all orphans from the war. You're interrogating these kids as part of the main quest, one of the ancillary dialogue choices allows one of the kids to describe to you watching his family be butchered. And it's, like, extremely well acted. It's extremely, like, gut-wrenching. And it just ties back into the world. I feel like every little thing in this game ties back into, like, the awful reality of the war that's going on. And going along with that, the next thing I have on my list is the voice acting in this game. Everyone besides Geralt is, like, really good. Geralt is kind of, like, not so great. He just kind of grumbles and like, mumbles, and it's like, I can take it or leave it. Everyone else, these characters which you'll meet for side quests, they're all great, and I really enjoy it.
Jamie, a lot of time, what are you talking about?
Roach.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Because he doesn't talk that much. It's literally something that he says. so many tiny things in this game that you don't even notice, but I feel like they make a big difference. Tiny stupid things. You guys are gonna laugh, but like, I love how like Geralt's beard grows over time, and then you can go get it shaved.
Especially when you turn on NVIDIA Hairworks.
Oh my god, yeah. I really like how this game, speaking of how cinematic everything is in this game like employs music really well, so the game will literally hold off on recycling the track that's playing until you get to a dialogue option. And then when someone starts to explain something that's really dramatic, the music will kick in. Little things like that, or like just having like a camera shot through a window of a conversation as opposed to just faces. It's so good. I feel like another thing to contrast with Fallout 4, you come out of the vault in Fallout 4, you talk to some people and they're just like, "What's up?" And you're just like, "Hey." Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't make any sense. You just came out of a vault.
Hello, Wastelander.
After 200 years, you should come out of that vault. No, Vinny on the Giant Bomb was talking about this. You should come out of that vault and be like, "What the fuck is going on?"
What is Instead, this? You call the NPC you never met by their first name. Sarah.
Exactly. Hey, Billy. Yeah. And this game just does the exact opposite. If you kill one of the Bloody Baron's men at one point early in the area where he is, his men will try to kill you throughout the entire time of your being there. If you find a peaceful way to deal with them, they will not do that. And that, like, influences every interaction you'll have in, like, major cities in that area. People actually respond to you differently based on what you've done, and it's really cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah. I think the gameplay, while not perfect, is really fun. I like the fact that you have to read through the bestiary, brew the right potions, make the right oils, and then go into battle. And if you use all of those things that the bestiary tells you to do, as well as dodging and everything at your disposal, some really impossible fights become really manageable. And one thing I'll say, this really shouldn't ever be a reason to put a game high on your list, but this game is just completely gorgeous, and especially on PC. I've been playing it for over 20 hours now, and I sometimes just stop and just stare at it, and it just, the lighting is incredible. It doesn't go for that hyper realistic thing. It's got its own kind of thing going on. It's not photorealistic like Star Wars Battlefront. It's got
kind of like fairy tale esque.
Yeah, and I just love it. So that's my whole list. I'm sorry that it didn't make your guys' list. I know Griffin, you played a lot of it. It just didn't grab you as much as it did me. But I really,
I haven't given it a fair shake yet, so it's very possible that it will be a really compelling and wonderful game for me. I just haven't really tried yet, so.
Mm-hmm. And I want to name off just a few things, because it is on my potential contenders for top games, and it's very good. I just, I think it was just like, more games started coming out, and I had to play those.
Yeah.
It's a victim of how big and ambitious it is, in a sense, in terms of people playing.
And hey, see, last year, I don't like to put games on my list I don't finish, and I didn't finish Witcher 3. Gwent is awesome.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Screw you, Jeff.
Gwent is amazing. Gwent is different person. The best triple triad ever.
Yes, it's great. It's excellent. The hunts that you do, like the monsters, that the big buck hunters that you got to do, where you're like going to their nest, like the build up that you have to go through in order to get to the big fight, it works both in world who Geralt is as a Witcher, and like it puts a lot more weight on what you're doing to build up to that point of that boss fight, or so to speak, that monster fight where you're like, okay, I'm going to go look at its eggs. Oh, all its eggs are smashed, so it's pissed. Or something, you know.
Can I also just say,
like,
best?
I got to find some poop and use the poop to lure it. Or
best boobs and butts 2015.
Oh my god, so good.
Oh, true. There are some boobs and butts.
There are boobs and butts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also that scene where Geralt looks at the cat, and I lost my fucking shit because of it.
Yeah, that was so good.
That is such a good scene.
Before I
agree with you 100%. Like, the missions are really great. The multi-pronged nature they have.
Yeah. I love how some of the missions, like, you can just legitimately fail. Like, I had some minor quests where, like, the people that I was supposed to protect died, and instead of the game being like, oh, they died, try again, they died, I turned in the quest, the dude who I turned the quest into was like, I'm not paying you anything, that guy died, and then it's just over. And it's like,
that's great.
I think that's so cool. And I then think, also there are certain quests where it won't tell you what to do. There's usually a marker on the map, but there are other times when the quest will just say, like, why don't you just, like, ask people and, like, just figure it out.
You dingus. So,
Sorry, Jeff, I
The other
you.
Thing that I really liked about The Witcher 3 was how it wasn't Dragon Age Inquisition in that it was fun at the beginning.
Shots fired.
Jokes aside, like, that intro area, that it is essentially like the tutorial zone, is awesome.
Yeah, it is.
And then you go on to the next area, and it's like, okay, I could be happy not leaving here, but you do.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah, I really want to carve out enough time to get immersed in that world. It feels daunting for me, just in the way that open world-y games can sometimes feel daunting, but everything I hear about it really compels me. So thank you for talking about it again, Jamie, because I know Griffin's kind of had his time with it, and I'm excited to hear more impressions. So,
yes, good work.
Yes. Anyway, I guess I'll hit my number one now, which, if you guys haven't guessed it already, is Undertale. And mm-hmm. I also kind of like this game for not being anything like Fallout 4. Undertale is... Gosh, it's a hard game to talk about. It's an RPG that takes a lot of cues from the Mother series, and when you do that, and you do it well, because I think a lot of games try to do it and don't do it so well, but when you do that well, I mean, you're automatically something that I need to pay attention to, because Mother 3 is maybe one of my favorite games. Definitely my favorite RPG. And where this game succeeds in kind of aping that is that it kind of nails that humorous, endearing world that has, like, serious shit going on in it. And it nails that balance, like I said, of just kind of being funny, being lighthearted, but then it's occasionally, like, breaking your heart and making you feel something you weren't expecting. And I think that's kind of the best thing about this game. But the game has a lot of other stuff going on that's pretty cool about it, too. It's got a morality system based around killing monsters that actually, like, seriously changes the world in pretty profound ways. There's kind of a neutral route, which is a little wishy-washy, that the game kind of pushes you into the first time you play. But then there's a pacifist route, which is honestly, like, super insane and unbelievably satisfying to complete. Just getting through that ending, it's like you feel so many emotions of, like, hopelessness, hopefulness, triumph, defeat. It's fantastic. Really awesome, wonderful, like, kind of set pieces for what is essentially a 2D, like, lo-fi style game with really simplistic, chunky art style, and battles that are in black and white. But it really works. And then there's, like, a genocide mode, which I haven't played yet, that basically, like, makes you into the worst monster of all time and has real consequences that, by the way, like, reverberate beyond just that playthrough. Like, this is a game that has a story, but it also has this meta narrative about the world you're in and, like, some elements of persistence in this world. And you feel like you're connected to the characters in the world, but you also feel like you're, like, connected to the world state and, like the turbulence of this world throughout multiple playthroughs. It's a very odd sensation. In the game, it has these really cool moments where it kind of plays with the fourth wall. Like, there's a moment in the game where, like, the functioning of the game itself is affected in a way that influences the story. And it's quite fascinating. It really plays with stuff that normally would be, like, non-diegetic, like hitting a save point is, like, part of the game and important to the game, and, like, it's really cool the ways in which those things are integrated together. And you know, it's just, I mean, it really is the game that captivated me like no other this year. I mean, it's you know, the story, it was a tight story, you know, it's a short game, it only takes about 4 or 6 hours to complete, but every part of it is great, and you know, the different routes are fantastic and the characters are iconic. I mean, people are doing all kinds of fan arts and comics and all kinds of things. I mean, they really captivated people all over, and for good reason, because they're fun characters that have depth, And it's really impressive to achieve that in like a scripted RPG, and it's hard to do. And when a game like Mother 3 pulls it off, it's really something. It's like reading a great book. And I think this game does the same thing. And you know, there's just so many elements of humor. You know, every battle tells a story through the battle system. So it's a game that's really stuck with me, and it's definitely, I think it's deserving, for me at least, of my number one spot. So I think that about sums it up for me. I mean, Griffin, did you have any other things that really resonated with you about Undertale, since you didn't mention it before?
I think you covered them all. I'd say, you know, it did something that few games do, where it is genuinely funny and not in kind of like a like weirdness for weirdness's sake way. I really appreciated that part of it. Mm. But yeah, and then, you know, mechanically the battle system is unique and cool because of it. And then it also, like, the challenge of dealing with some of the morality is made even harder because of the battle system that was employed, and then the ramifications of you know, not killing things, essentially.
Yeah, the game makes you feel your decisions. Like, if you aren't going to kill anything, you're not going to get stronger. So you need to just be a little weakling for the whole game. And that's cool.
Yeah.
And it's also very difficult. Like, sometimes it's way more convenient to kill guys. And not killing them is a real challenge. So, yeah, it's a hell of a game. And I don't even want to really get too deep into spoiler land, because it's a game that's best enjoyed with kind of minimal expectations and minimal knowledge, just kind of immersing yourself in that world. So it's definitely, it's a very unlikely success story, you know, a game more or less made by one person. But it deserves it. It really does. So.
Absolutely. It was a great game this year.
Hell yeah.
Or last year, or whatever. All right, guys, let me tell you about the best game this year. Or no, it's my favorite game. Number one on my list is Jackbox Party Pack 2.
What? I really hope this isn't a joke. Really,
it is not a joke.
No,
I haven't tried it. I haven't tried it. So,
Jackbox Party Pack 2 is the best game this year, and it allows me once again to cheat my system by putting more than 10 games on my list, because there are more than one game. There are more than one game in Jackbox Party Pack 2. So Party Pack 2 contains a bunch of games, and I really liked Fibbage, one of my favorite games that came out, I think, 2 years ago. Party game where you have to type in, like, you essentially are given a trivia question with one word omitted, and you type in the trivia word to make the sentence true, or to make the fact make sense, and your goal is to make your lie as believable as possible so other people on the couch next to you pick your lie. And it's possible that you can type in the wrong answer, and the game's like, hey, good job. Yeah, okay, but you gotta do a good one. You gotta do a lie. So in Jackbox Party Pack 2, you have Fibbage 2. So already, that's great for me. Because now we've got more questions that I haven't seen already than I know the answers to. and then they throw in a bunch of other games, some of which are not great, like Earwax, which is a game that you're compiling sound effects, and then, you know, a judge chooses their winner based on the sound noises that play. But there's a lot of flaws with that one.
So many farts.
Not enough farts, actually.
Interesting.
Then you've got, like I mentioned, well, there's also Quiplash. Or is it Quiplash 2? I think it's Quiplash 2.
Probably, yeah.
That game. So what happened with Fibbage is, instead of writing down lies that you'd think you're going to trick the other people with, the meta game that we started to play was, like, put in the most hilarious choice into there, and then you're no longer competing to trick people. You're playing to, like, who is going to have the funniest, like, word that makes that trivia bit hilarious, or just, like, the most insanely offensive thing that you can write down there.
That's basically Quiplash.
so that's why Quiplash was created, is because people played Fibbage that way, and then, you know, Jackbox said, oh crap, we should just make that a game. So that's Quiplash. You're given a very simple prompt, and your objective is just to give a very funny, like, answer to that.
I feel like Quiplash is basically Cards Against Humanity, except we're not limited by the stuff you have in your hand. You're just limited by your imagination.
And that's what I've actually written that down here, and that's I can't play Cards Against Humanity anymore, because Quiplash and all those games just provide a better tool set for me to play in, like, yeah, to reward that just open-ended creativity instead of it, to matching that up, and that connection just doesn't really work for me. And in this game, where you can be like, when you have more freedom for humor, I enjoy that a lot more. Okay, so where was I? Okay, yeah, Quiplash. Good game. Great game. That one's really fun. Boy, is there, what are the other ones? Okay, well, let me just get on to my favorite. So, of course, Fibbage and Quiplash are great, but the secret best minigame in the pack group is a game called Bidiots. And it is taking, in one of their previous games, like a it's a picture-based game where you're given a prompt and you have to kind of draw it. I don't really remember. It wasn't very fun. Because essentially it just rewarded the best drawers. So the best drawers would always win, because you'd be like, oh, that one's really good and that makes sense. So in this, Bidiots is, it's an extremely complex and confusing game. And that's really why I like it, because everybody's kind of at the same disadvantage of it being very difficult. So what you do is you're given so much money and you're bidding on art. And the art is all made by players. So you're given a prompt. For example, I keep coming back to this one. It could be like Cinderella's Castle. So you have your device and you write on your device a picture. You draw a picture of Cinderella's Castle, or what, you know, you think is going to, you know, convey that to other people. You're given a few more prompts. You draw more pictures. And little do you know, the other people who are also drawing on their tablets or phones or whatever are given, or Wii U gamepads, are given similar prompts. So it could be like the Sistine Chapel or Notre Dame. So, okay, now everybody is drawing a different variation of castle. So, but I mean, like, you don't really know that.
And they all have different values, yeah. Right?
Right, because I could say, like, well, yes. The reason why it's so good is because, like, you can't figure it out. Like, I go into that game and it's like, oh, this one, my first prompt is like a bad haircut. And it's like, okay, so what is everybody else drawing? Are they drawing haircuts? Are they drawing, like, mundane activities? Like, what is the unifying factor that we're all going to be tripping up on? And you never know until you get going, and then you're like, oh, okay, it's all hair, anything hair related.
And then you have to like bid on the ones that you think are the most valuable, right?
Yes. So then once the game starts kicking off, you are given information on your screen where it's like, okay, this piece of art, the Notre Dame, is worth $800, and what's another castle? Buckingham Palace is worth $32,000. Let's just say that. That's fine. So now, when you think you see the picture that is Notre Dame, you're like, okay, I'm not going to go above $800 on this because there's no point. Like, it's not going to be worth it. But then, if you're absolutely certain that that is the picture, and then somebody else thinks it's something else, you can sit there and bid them up and be like, oh, okay, this person really wants this piece of art, so they must think that it is something that it is not. And then you bid them up, and then it's like, okay, they win it, and it's like, oh crap, actually that thing was what they wanted, and they got like a $700 profit from it.
Yeah.
And this just keeps going in interesting ways. Like, you'll find, it's like, okay, your artist up on screen, do you bid it up, or do you sit back because you don't want to take the risk that you're going to get stuck with your own art, you make no money on it, and now you're in the hole.
I feel like, just from what I've seen of Jackbox, I feel like the best part about Jackbox is it's like, it's funny in an unscripted way that can only be generated by the group you're with. Like, it is kind of like Cards Against Humanity, except without any limitations ever. So, like, it's just like, it's always funny in novel ways. And I feel, yes, like all these games do that in different ways. Like, Bidiots is funny because it's like, oh, that is definitely a bad haircut. No, actually, it's like grass, and it's hilarious because it looks so stupid.
Right. And where I think Jackbox Party Pack works so well as a single package is I can play this game with a different group of friends that may not be super creative or funny, but we'll find a game, like, we can play Fibbage in there and it's still Fibbage and it's still great. Mm-hmm. Cuz, you know, it's not super reliant on like actual humor. Like, you can actually play it like a game
if you're a dummy, not fun friends.
yeah, dumb idiot, not fun friends. Then you can have you know, people who have that like creativity and humor and play Quiplash with them and have a good time, yeah. Or Bidiots, and then there's the final game, which I almost forgot about, which is Bomb Squad, which is essentially
Keep talking and Odie
never
explodes.
Yeah. Oh, okay, that one. That one. It's that game where you have, you know, everybody on their device has instructions on what to do, but some information can override the other information, and you're cutting wires on bombs, and the humor is there because you're in a bomb factory, and, you know, they make light of that, and it's like, oh, file these papers, and if you don't file them right, we're going to explode. And then, you know, the game actually says, like, it would be weird if it didn't happen at this point, right? And so it's like, it's great. Like, it's actually genuinely hilarious, and there's enough diversity there that you can do something that's fun with a different group, no matter what. Even if you have more players, like, everybody can jump in and be a part of the audience and actually interact with it. It's just a game you can literally play with anybody.
Yeah, I think it's a testament to how well it's written and conceived, because, like, the questions really encourage, like, really funny play. And so do, like, the categories of things to draw. Like, whoever came up with this stuff is pretty smart.
They're all good. And, you know, I listened to some interviews with them on the game, and some of, like, the Easter eggs that they snuck into it, like, I haven't even seen yet, and I'm still not, like, treading on old content, or it's still new for how much I've played of this game. So I'm really impressed by that. And pound for pound, it is just the most fun that I have had this year. I think Bidiots is a testament of how it's not just, like, the people I'm with, because I really actually enjoy playing that game part of the game. I enjoy the game side of that game. I like to win that game, but I also really enjoy the humor that comes along with it too.
I have to get this game. I have a question though. There's the Party Pack 1 and there's Party Pack 2.
Yes.
What do I do?
Get Party Pack 2.
Party Pack 2? Okay.
Yep. Because that Party Pack 1 is going to have the older games like Fibbage and maybe the first Quiplash. I think it's Quiplash 2 in this. I can't remember.
Can they change the name of the series to Now That's What I Call Jackbox?
Ooh, nice.
That would be so good.
I wish I had more people around who would play party video games with me, but I really don't.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the big deterrent for me. But otherwise, I mean, I've watched streams of it, and it is absolutely hilarious. So I could totally see why it's so high up on your list.
It's a great game.
I'm going to try to play this tonight, actually. I might try to get my family together.
Nice.
That's a good idea.
Because I believe in family values.
For America.
James Sheriff, MD. all right, that's it, guys. That was super fun. I will eventually post my list and some more explanations.
Yeah, I'm going to do the same.
Physical format.
Yeah, I'm going to do it this time, Griff. I'm doing it.
Great.
You heard it here first.
So we're at about 2.5 hours or so to get through all that. Do we want to do any awards, or do we want to spend just a few minutes talking about, like, some of the near misses that didn't make the list?
I think maybe near misses and then cut it, because I gotta go back to my lady.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. Yep.
I can say a few near misses real quick. Just kind of run down the list that I had.
Uh-huh.
Let me just get there. One hot second. Okay.
I'll do an eat. Okay.
Go ahead. I was going to say, easy one. Not really even a near miss for me at this point. Fallout 4. We talked about it for like 2 seconds. We've alluded to how it really didn't deliver, but this is a game that I think in a lot of ways is a huge step back from what was great about those games. This is a game where every character is more or less the same, even though you have some choices to make. Like, they've eliminated the evil choices for the most part from characters. They've eliminated expressing yourself through role playing. You know, every character build looks very similar because things are level gated and stats don't really matter except for unlocking perks, and the perks don't really matter either. It's just a game that's been very, like, homogenized and made bland. And
neutered. Yeah.
Jamie kind of talked about how, like, your character, who is fully voiced now, which I think is mostly for the worse, honestly, just doesn't react right. They should be way more freaked out about being in this post-apocalyptic world, but they're just like, whatever. all the attempts at letting you roleplay are very ham-fisted, and it's like it's got that Mass Effect dialogue tree going on, except it's just bad.
Yeah, your four options are sarcastic, goody two shoes, terrorize, and then the one that I would always end up clicking because it was the one that was like the one that was usually the more inquisitive, like. Yeah. Tell me more about this world.
But even that one is...
No, it just furthers the dialogue.
Yeah, even that one is, like, completely rote. It's like, question? It's like, question? Yes. No. Yeah. Those are your choices. And you can't... Even the no choice is like, no, I can't help you right now. It's not like, I'm an asshole and I'm going to do bad things to you. It's just, no, not right now. Yeah. it's a game that I'm kind of sad that I sunk so much time into because looking back on it, it really is just not... I mean, the combat, compared to other Fallout and Elder Scrolls games, is probably the best it's ever been. And modding guns is fun and addicting, but it is a game that I feel like is just mostly addicting and doesn't have much behind it. Like, it is a giant Skinner box with lots of addicting, you know, moles to whack or whatever, but that's all you can do in that game. I think all of us feel the same way. It's just not really something that deserves to be here. The other thing that I just wanted to mention that didn't make the list, but I'm sad it didn't, is Downwell. Have you guys both played Downwell?
Yep. Yes.
I have it on multiple
devices. Not very well, though.
I have it on my PC and my phone.
Nice. I played it on mobile just because I think it's more suited to kind of a mobile experience. It's a really fun game. It's basically an unlimited fall, or what do you call those games? Like falling forever game? Fall forever game?
My dream.
Yeah, it's a Fall Forever game, but it is like the most stylistic and like action oriented Fall Forever game ever, and it also has an ending, which is good because Fall Forever games that go on forever are kind of sad. But it is a game where you're rewarded for skillful play, building up combo meters and like using your weapons well, and you have guns on your boots, which is awesome, and they can provide you some propellant into the air, and if you bump on enough enemies then you get an extra piece of heart or whatever. And it's just really fun and twitchy and combo-driven and challenging and has some light roguelike elements, which is always fun. it just wasn't quite good enough to edge out Lara Croft Go, which is really the best mobile game this year. But it's definitely worth your time, and it's dirt cheap. So that's all I really care about in terms of what didn't make the cut. But one of the other guys, take it away.
I got an easy one, and that's Witcher 3 was on my list. But I think that, you know, Jamie covered it. And it is a very good game.
Yeah.
one that I'll quickly throw out, and it really doesn't make it on a technicality because I guess it came out in 2014, is
Freedom Planet. There you go.
Yeah. And that game is the best Sonic game that I didn't know I wanted.
You knew you wanted it, Jamie.
Well, I knew I wanted a new Sonic game. I didn't know I wanted a new Sonic game that was actually this substantially different in a lot of ways. A lot of new moves, but it
motorcycles.
And it somehow keeps the momentum going. It does have really long levels, like I like. And really cool game.
Also, there's a sequel coming out.
That's
exciting.
Cool. That's cool.
Griff, go.
Okay, I have, like I said, Galaxy got edged out eventually, and I think it's mainly because the game's really hard and demanding and kind of mean. But I don't know, like it's one of those themes that keep coming up through the course of this year where it's like, oh, that was on me game. Like, I could have played that better. Like, it's my fault, not yours. I understand. But because it's so, like, tactically demanding and also, like, button press, like, your actions are very important with what you're doing and how your fingers are moving on that controller. Like, I can't play that game laying down. Like, I have to sit up looking at the screen, full attention given, play better in the morning. Like,
I need to play all my games with one hand. You know why.
Oh, yes. Because the other person is playing the controller with their hand.
That's why.
It does so many cool things. Like, stylistically, I enjoy its, like, throwback to 80s anime silliness, and like the music in it is fantastic, and the transforming mech thing that they do later in, like, creates some awesome moments in how you play the game. So it does a lot of things well. It just, it's really hard, and I never finished it. And I don't even know if the whole game is out yet. Like, the fifth chapter may still be unavailable, possibly.
Oh, really? That's a thing?
Yeah. it could be. I haven't checked it out in a while.
Oh, okay. Huh. That's weird. I had no idea.
Jeff, you mentioned Fallout 4.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No. If we're going to flip around, that's fine.
Oh, okay. I was going to say Star Wars Battlefront. Everyone hates that game. I really like that game a lot. Whenever I hear someone criticize it, I'm always like, yep, that's completely right. Like, there's not a whole lot to do in it. It doesn't do anything different. But for some reason, it's a really fun game. It's oddly, like, photorealistic, and I like every little thing they give you to do in that game, whether it's, like, riding the speeder or, I don't know, flying an X-Wing into someone who killed me earlier. Like, that's... I really like that stuff.
JB,
like,
that's dumb. You can't do that. It's not lore-friendly.
I like how a lot of the levels have really interesting indoor elements and then really wide, expansive outdoor elements, but you find yourself spending an equal amount of time in both.
I enjoy the indoor elements.
And I like how crazy stuff happens. Like, you'll just be running around, and then the Emperor is there, and then he kills you. And I think that's cool. Or, like, you're outside, and then you get trampled by an AT-AT or something. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. You made your case. I haven't even
played that game a little bit.
I haven't played it at all, so I can't really speak to it. But I know, Griff, you weren't super enthralled.
Nope, not at all.
Griffin, you had more to say?
Sorry. Jeff, Fallout 4, you mentioned that. I agree 100%. It missed its mark. Maybe this is not the venue for it, but the end of that game really, really, really pissed me off.
Good thing I never fully finished it.
Yeah.
I knew it was going to be terrible.
If you're not going to finish it, I'll be happy to have that conversation and see what you think.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that, you know, in a different... Like, there, that way that they end that game is for somebody. It just wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
But moving on. On this list that I have that didn't make it, Batman Arkham Knight. Mm. Kind of wasn't great.
For me, too. That's on my honorable mention list. There were things about it that were great.
Yeah. It was more Batman, which is fine. And it was more good Batman.
Become the Bat.
Uh-huh.
Even the odds.
Like, the side missions were all fun. Like, some of the extra character villains that you ran into were cool. I enjoyed the Joker stuff that was in it. But, you know, the villains and kind of, like, the whole overall story that they were going with was boring and very stupidly telegraphed. And I don't know. Like, it just was kind of flat to me. But for some reason, I kept playing it and finished it all the way through.
Well, there you go.
Yep.
Because punching people.
Because punching people in the face never gets old.
It's so good.
I continue to struggle to get into those games, but it sounds like I didn't miss much with Arkham Knight, so.
Sure. Anything else anybody wants to add?
I think that's it for me. What about you, Jamie?
Yeah.
Anything?
Okay.
No, I'm good.
I was just going to mention Mortal Kombat X came out this year, and for the new characters that they threw in, was actually pretty good, better than it had any right to be. Just it didn't stack up with what else was out there. And then I have Yo-Kai Watch written down here, and that's a game that I will pick up every once in a while and be like, wow, this is good, I can still play it. But then it's like there's no real like driving momentum that makes me want to keep playing it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of heard that it lacked direction in terms of like, it's like, oh, let's just go, like, go into the woods now. It's chapter 5, time to go to the woods.
Yep.
That's what I read about, yeah. The demo didn't really grab me, unfortunately.
Sure. All right, guys, I think it's a good place to wrap it up. Everybody's top 10s, all excellent. It's interesting to see that there is so much similarities between our list, but just in different orders. So,
for sure, yeah.
Good year for games.
I think this was a nice year, though. Like, a lot of, you know, this flowed easily, and I feel like we had some choices, unlike last year, where it was pretty much just like, well, this is what you got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's nice to see.
definitely.
I haven't even played Tomb Raider.
All right, well, what's that?
I haven't even played Tomb Raider.
There you go.
Or Undertale. Like,
play Undertale.
I didn't play those games.
Man. Yeah. You should do that.
Yeah, you should probably do that. Jamie, you're gonna take on Rise of the Tomb Raider for both of us.
Sounds good.
All right. Should we send this thing off?
Yes, let's do that. Happy 2016, everybody. This has been Boss Barrel Radio End of the Year Game Discussion Thing. I've been Griffin Hoffman, and with me is Jeff and Jamie.
Goodbye.
Yay.
You guys want to say your names? Yeah. Okay, there we go. Thanks, and we'll see you around.
Bye.
Bye-bye.